You got the system going?
Got some music running.
I think it's time to go here this morning, especially when I see Mr. Potter come in off his wedding and celebration that he had, and he's here on time today, so we should probably get going. Married life is good for you, you know. So would the clerk call, I'd like to call the meeting to order, and when you clerk call the roll, please.
Commissioner Ashajian.
Here.
Commissioner Blank.
Here.
Commissioner Wesel.
Here.
Commissioner Secord.
Present.
Commissioner Neely.
Here.
Commissioner Potter.
Here.
Commissioner Riley.
Here.
Commissioner Schellenberger.
Here.
Commissioner Wan.
Here.
Chairman Kruer.
Here.
You have a quorum.
And before I go to staff to announce the changes and the on today's agenda and the procedures we'll follow, I'd like to go to Vice Chair Neely to welcome everybody here. And at this point, I'd like to recognize her.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to do just that, welcome the commissioners and the staff and everyone in the audience who's here on some of our agenda items to Humboldt County. We really hope you enjoy your stay here with us. And we hope to do some good business for the coast while we're here this week.
Thank you, Vice Chair Neely. We always enjoy being here in Eureka and all the commissioners, and we have a great time, and thanks a lot on your behalf of the way you create such a nice atmosphere for us with these fine people in this area. We appreciate it.
Where's the sun?
Yeah.
Where's the sun?
Okay, and with that, I'll go back. Mr. Director, who do you want me to recognize? Mr. Merrill?
Well, good morning, Commissioners. Before we get into agenda changes, I just wanted to make a few announcements and remind you of the special events that are occurring this week, starting with the Greater Eureka Chamber of Commerce reception this evening. That's the traditional reception that the Chamber has hosted for many years, and just like the last few years, it's going to be at the Avalon Restaurant in Old Town. They're going to provide hors d'oeuvres, and Coast Seafoods will be barbecuing oysters as they did in years past. There is a no-host bar, and the reception is scheduled to start at 5:30, and the cost is $20 for commissioners and invited guests, $30 for the general public. The restaurant's located at 3rd and G Street, and I distributed a map for the commissioners at the dais. If anyone else would like a map, come see me, and I can give you that. And then on Thursday night, there's a reception and bay cruise that's hosted by the Humboldt Bay Stewards, Orca, and the Humboldt Baykeeper group on Thursday evening. The reception will be on the Matticat, which is an historic Humboldt Bay ferry boat that's now operated by the Maritime Museum as a cruise vessel on Humboldt Bay. And that will leave from the marina that's just right outside the building here at 5 o'clock. And it'll be a docent-led cruise that's scheduled for about an hour and a half. It may go a little bit longer, so be prepared for that. Hors d'oeuvres will be provided, but the bar will be no host. And you can park in the parking lot here at the Warfinger building. But please remember to bring a warm jacket because it's very likely to be chilly. The Matticat has a strict capacity of 49 souls, and after listing the reception in the commission's meeting notice, the word quickly spread and reservations were accepted, and unfortunately the cruise is full to capacity right now, so unfortunately we won't be able to accept any more reservations. Other things, there is coffee available for commissioners and staff in the kitchen back here. As a state employee who may be making minimum wage soon, I'd appreciate if you could make a donation to the till there. And then as far as other announcements, for those in the audience, if you'd like to address the commission on any item today, you need to fill out a speaker slip, which is found on the table just outside the doorway into the room, and hand that to a staff member. There are staff reports and addendums and binders that you can look at. And then lastly, I'd like to just remind people to please turn off your cell phones during the meeting. And with that, I'll turn things over to Sherilyn Sarb.
Thank you, Bob. And I'll go through the agenda, the changes on today's agenda. On page 3 of the agenda, there are no changes. On page 4, item 11A, the Malkin appeal has been withdrawn. On page 5, items 12A, 12B, and 13A all move to consent. On page 6, item 16A, Dewey, move to consent. And item 17A, the Arches Restaurant, move to consent. On page 7, item 20A, the Long Beach appeal is postponed. On page 8, item 24A, the City of San Buenaventura LCP amendment is withdrawn. Item 24B, the City of Santa Barbara LCP amendment is postponed. And item 25A, Page, move to consent. Right, I said Santa Barbara instead of San Buenaventura. That's item 24B is postponed. So that's a correction. And on page 9, item 25B, 40689 Richardson, move to consent. Item 25C, 40797 is postponed. And then item 25D, the number there on your sheet is incorrect. That's 407131, the municipal water permit is postponed. And that concludes the changes on today's agenda. Moving to item C, this is the consent calendar for the San Diego District. There is one item that's the type routinely approved by the commission. The conditions are acceptable and there's no known opposition. So staff recommends the commission approve the consent calendar for San Diego.
Commissioner Wetzel. Consent calendar. Been moved by Commissioner Wetzel and seconded by Commissioner Secord. And both the maker and second are asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this consent item? Hearing none, the consent calendar is approved.
Thank you. And item 4 is the consent calendar items for the South Coast District, Orange County. Again, all the conditions are acceptable and there's no known opposition to these items. Therefore, staff recommends the commission approve the consent calendar.
Commissioners?
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Wetzel, seconded by Commissioner Akajian. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this consent calendar? Hearing none, the consent calendar is approved.
Item number 5 are the administrative permits for the Los Angeles County portion of the South Coast District. Staff is not aware of any opposition to the two administrative permits on the administrative calendar and recommends the commission concur with the executive director's determination on these items.
Is there any objection to finding concurrence with the executive director's determination on these two? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
Item number 6 are the consent calendar permits for South Coast District, LA County. Again, staff is unaware of any opposition to the permit applications of the consent calendar and recommends the commission vote and approve the consent calendar.
Commissioners?
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Schallenberger and seconded by Commissioner Akajian. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on the consent calendar? Hearing none, the commission has approved the consent calendar.
Item number 7 are the administrative permits for the South Central Coast District. Staff is not aware of any opposition to the one administrative permit and recommends the commission concur with the executive director's determination that this item qualifies as an administrative permit.
Is there any objection to finding concurrence with the executive director's determination? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
And item 8 is the deputy director's report for the San Diego District. This is the list of waivers, non-material amendments, and extensions and emergency permits for San Diego. There's one regular and one de minimis waiver. Both are the type of development routinely approved by the commission. There is also an emergency permit to report for a below-grade retention system seaward of an existing residence on a blufftop lot on Pacific Street in Solana Beach. This is the same device was previously authorized by the executive director and reported to the commission as an emergency permit. However, delays in processing at the city have occurred and the original emergency permit expired. The coastal staff engineer and geologist concur an emergency continues to exist at the site, which demands immediate response as proposed. The device is located as far landward as possible and consistent in design with other types of devices like this approved by the commission. A follow-up regular permit application will be required And the emergency permit includes the standard conditions applied to this type of development in this segment of the Solana Beach shoreline. And finally, there is a non-material amendment to a permit for a relatively small beach replenishment project in the Leucadia Encinitas shoreline. And we have not received any adverse comments on this non-material amendment to date. Therefore, staff recommends the commission concur with the executive director's determination on these matters and approve the deputy director's report.
Is there any objection to finding concurrence with the executive director's determination on these matters? Hearing none, the commission concurs. Consent calendar?
Well, I have one other additional item to report. Okay. I distributed a letter that the staff wrote to the Board of Port Commissioners regarding an initiative that's being proposed on the November ballot. It's titled the Marine Preservation and Bayfront Redevelopment Initiatives. It proposes to changes to the port master plan. We sent the letter this week to the port identifying the issues that the commission staff has identified regarding the initiative's consistency with the Coastal Act. And our letter makes clear that the commission's taken no position regarding the legality of the measure, but we did feel it's appropriate to identify the concerns regarding the consistency of the potential port master plan amendment resulting from the initiative if it's approved by the voters with Chapter 3 and Chapter 8 policies of the Coastal Act, and that there is a process that the port master plan amendment would have to be submitted by the port and approved by the commission should the initiative be approved by the voters. I have no further comments on the letter at this time. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Okay. Consent calendar?
That concludes the deputy director's report. Item 9 are the items moved from today's regular calendar to the consent calendar by staff. Again, if anyone is here that wants to speak on the items, they should come forward now. The first is item 12A, 60832, Gessner. Item 12B, 60848, California Department of Parks and Recreation. And item 13A, 687606A2, Rubin. And these, there are addendums on all three of the items. For the last one, it's a minor correction. For the first two, they were done in response to the applicant's comments on the initial staff report. The conditions as they are now are acceptable to the applicant, and therefore we recommend that the commission approve these items on the consent calendar.
Okay.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. There's a speaker slip. I'd like to... Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't see it on the top. You have Bradley Gessner not planning to speak unless called upon, so that's fine. So there's a motion and a second, and the maker and the second of the motion are asking for approval. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission approves this item. Okay.
Next item is 10A. This is a request to extend the time limit for the commission action on the City of Solana Beach's submittal of its LCP land use plan. This is not an LCP amendment, but the first time submittal of an LCP document by the City of Solana Beach. And pursuant to the commission's regulations, the commission must act on a land use plan within 90 days of the submittal unless the deadline is waived by the commission. Staff does need additional time to review the land use plan submittal, and we're requesting that the commission approve a time extension not to exceed 1 year. The city is aware of the request. We anticipate we may be able to bring this to you at the November 2008 commission hearing. And the motion to approve the time extension is on the front page of the one-page staff report.
Okay. Are there any ex parties on this? I'm just asking. It's an LCP matter. None. Commissioner Weisel?
Yes, I move that the commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on the City of Solana Beach LUP for a period not to exceed 1 year. Recommend a yes vote.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Weisel and seconded by Commissioner Akajian. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Akajian?
No, sir.
Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the time extension is approved.
And could I have the PowerPoint on the next item, please? Item 11B. This is an appeal by the Citizens for Preservation of Parks and Beaches of the City of Oceanside decision to approve a property line adjustment affecting the Marina Towers leasehold within the Oceanside Harbor District. The notice of final action for the coastal development permit, as approved by the city, indicates the lot line adjustment is to facilitate the sale of the property per the purchase and sale agreement with the Marina Towers Association. All of the parcels that are affected by the lot line adjustment are currently owned by the City of Oceanside. I'd like to draw your attention to the addendum on this item. There are some revisions to the staff report. These were done in response to a letter distributed to the commissioners last Thursday and as a separate item today from the applicant's representative. This letter has given staff for the first time a good indication of the full scope of the lot line adjustment and its potential effects on the Marina Towers leasehold and the surrounding properties within the Harbor District. There's also an additional exhibit, a letter from the State Lands Commission, a letter from the City Manager's Office, a copy of the Notice of Final Action, and an ex parte communication. And the slide one on the shows the location of the Marina Towers leasehold and the surrounding area. And I know many of the commissioners have been at Oceanside. I want to orient you a little bit. I-5 is to the left, and you come down west from I-5 to Harbor Drive, bear left here past the Marina Towers building, which is here. And you can either go then to Harbor Drive South or bear right to Harbor Drive North to the northern part of the marina. The ocean entrance is actually here. And again, what you're seeing here is just the southern part of the Oceanside Marina. The staff is recommending the commission find substantial issue due to the lot line's potential effect on the leasehold status of the parcel as described in the Harbor Precise Plan, which is a component of the city's certified LCP. The lot line adjustment is to allow sale of the property to private ownership, which would change the leasehold status that's identified in the plan. And when we were asked by the city, the commission staff identified in 2006 our belief that such a change should actually occur through an LCP amendment to address the priority use questions associated with the permanent residential use on the ocean-fronting land that is in the Harbor District and surrounded by harbor-related and visitor-serving uses. The city chose not to process an LCP amendment, but instead did a coastal development permit for the lot line adjustment. The appeal of the city's decision to approve the permit for the lot line adjustment has raised several concerns, including the effects of the change in leasehold status or sale of the property on public access. The appeal cites Section 30222 that indicates use of private lands suitable for visitor-serving commercial recreational facilities designed to enhance public opportunities for coastal recreation should have priority over private residential and general commercial development. The appellant also acknowledges that sale of the property to private ownership would result in loss of a leasehold within the Harbor District, and the Harbor Precise Plan indicates leaseholds within the harbor should be directed towards optimizing public access, and loss of the publicly held leasehold would be in conflict with the Harbor Precise Plan policies that promote harbor-related and visitor-serving uses. The appellant also alleges loss of leasehold would result in less revenue to the Harbor District because the Harbor Precise Plan clearly acknowledges the existing leaseholds to be the primary revenue-producing lands in the harbor area. Further, the grounds for appeal state the adjacent public parking area may be public parkland, and deeding any portion of the parking to private use may require a public vote. Regarding the public parking issue, the appellant also indicates the city action does not clearly show which spaces are public and questions why the control and maintenance of the parking lot should be given to Marina Towers. Regarding the public parking, it has just recently become more clear to the commission staff how the approved lot line adjustment affects the parking lot adjacent to Marina Towers, which is city-owned and presumably a public lot. Slide 2 shows how the sliver parcel containing one-third of the public parking, and it's here on the existing there is a little red sliver here. That's one-third of the public parking, and the lot line is being adjusted so that that sliver would be confined into the portion of the lot containing the remaining two-thirds of the public parking, which is part of this much larger yellow parcel that consists of tidelands within the northern portion of the marina. Slide 3 shows how the sliver parcel or how the parking is related to the proposed lot in red that holds the private development. The public parking, here we go, is here. This is the portion that would be combined with the larger public or parcel that contains tidelands and the northern part of the marina. That's considered parcel B. And then this new parcel A, shown in red, is what would be carved out of, as parcel A, would be carved out of a larger parcel C that contains the southern part of the marina. This slide shows the entrance to the lot today. Currently, there's nothing that indicates the public lot. This is a public lot. And after the lot line adjustment, the private residents will require use of the public lot to gain access to their garage and the private spaces in the lot. The public and private use of this lot after the lot line adjustment was not addressed in the approved coastal development permit, and staff recommends the commission find that this is a substantial issue resulting from the lot line adjustment that is primarily being done to separate the private residential use from the remaining public uses on the lots and is clearly affected by the lot line adjustment. Finally, the appellant alleges that the city staff report and exhibits for the proposed lot line adjustment do not adequately reflect the intent of the lot line adjustment. Commission staff agrees, since it has just recently become much more clear the extent of the parcels that are affected by the lot line adjustment. And this slide shows again where the red parcel will be carved from a larger parcel that contains the rest of the southern portion of the marina. There are some public tidelands on this tail of this segment of the parcel that is inland of Harbor Drive that is also being separated out. And on this slide, again, it shows that the new Marina Towers parcel is part of a much larger parcel that contains the southern portion of the marina. And for a lot line adjustment, if any portion of a parcel is within the commission's appeal jurisdiction, all of the parcels that are affected by the lot line adjustment would also be subject to the commission's appeal jurisdiction. To summarize, we feel that this lot line adjustment is to affect the sale of the property and the change in the leasehold status, and that is a substantial issue that should be addressed in considering the alternatives, because what will result is the retention of the residential use on this site as a permanent use. And through the appeal, we should consider alternatives, consider the surrounding development, the compatibility with surrounding development, the services that are provided, and whether or not this is the appropriate long-term use of the site. The precise plan does indicate that through review of permit applications, the city should consider the long-term use of those properties and whether or not visitor-serving uses or harbor-related development would be preferable in the long term. The only question before the commission today is substantial issue, and unless three or more commissioners wish to have a hearing on the substantial issue question, substantial issue will be found. And that concludes my comments at this time.
Thank you. Let's do ex parte, starting on my left.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On September 5th, 11:30 in the morning hours, I did have a conference call with Ms. McCabe, Lou Lightfoot, and Steve Kaufman. I received a briefing on the project. They explained that the lot line adjustment proposed by the city is to create a separate 1.26-acre parcel, nine tide lands, city-owned land upon which the Marina Towers condominium complex is located to facilitate sale of the property. I also believe that the project is not within the Coastal Commission appeal jurisdiction, as it is not located between the first public road and the sea, nor is the Marina Towers property within the appeal jurisdiction, as it is excluded under the commission and adopted post-certification appeals map. And further discussion on the grounds of the appeal presented by the appellants, and more discussion and reviews of the appellant's appeal contention relating to the public parking lot adjacent to the Marina Towers property. That pretty much sums up my discussions with them.
Thank you, Commissioner Kajian. Commissioner Wasel.
Thank you. Last week, I spoke with Councilwoman Esther Sanchez of Oceanside, and she mentioned that this project is a change of ownership. Therefore, it's not a project, and she didn't feel that it would be appropriate to have a hearing on this item. In addition to that, she mentioned that the magnitude of the investment and the size of the project in terms of private ownership that's currently living there, it's very, very unlikely that in the near and the distant future this project would ever be evaluated for a change in use. So she thought that it would be appropriate to allow the lot line adjustment to take place. Also, my staff member, Alonso Gonzalez, spoke with Susan McCabe and Stephen Kaufman on behalf of the applicant on Monday, the 8th. They believe the project is not within the Coastal Commission's appeal jurisdiction and that it's not located between the first public road and the sea, nor is the Marina Towers property within the appeal jurisdiction, as it is excluded under the Commission's adopted post-certification appeals map. The project proponents do not believe that this ground for appeal is properly before the Commission, that is, as it was not raised by the appellants, nor do they believe there is merit to this issue.
Commissioner Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My ex partes are on file.
I had an ex parte in La Jolla, California, in my office on September 4th. Lou Lightfoot and Susan McCabe came in to see me and discussed the same issues that Commissioner Akajian spoke to in his ex parte, and with special emphasis on whether or not this property is located in the appeals jurisdiction, whether it was back behind the first public road, and whether or not the 200 feet that plus or minus that is with the language especially adopted in the post-certification map, explaining that any area where a parcel they bore in on this is bisected by the appeals jurisdiction boundary, only that portion of the parcel with the area defined is appealable, is subject to the commission's appealable jurisdiction. So the ex parte was on that appeals jurisdiction, whether or not behind the first public road, and whether or not after the term of the lease, if nothing's done, what is the likelihood of a project, what would happen to this tower, et cetera. And we discussed that in most cases that usually a structure of 16 stories like this, et cetera, with so much infrastructure and cost and everything, there's an extension of a lease or something, but what you don't do is ever tear down the project because for the small parcel that it's located on, because everything is vertical on this, and so something would have, the parcel wouldn't come down and further become parkland or something like that. That's was the issue, was they thought, wondered if that's even possible. Anything's possible, but that didn't seem likely. So at any rate, that was the extent of my complete ex parte on that.
Mr. Chairman, my ex partes are on file.
Thank you, Commissioner Riley. Commissioner Blank?
I had a phone call at Monday at 9 a.m. from Steve Kaufman, Lou Lightfoot, and Susan McCabe. The summary is almost identical to my fellow commissioners, with the additional emphasis is they noted that the appellant issue got as their primary issue got expanded in the staff report from what seemed to be a staff appeal. appeal that turned it into a site-specific harbor for size plan requiring the city to examining other uses. And their point was that was not the appellant's contention, that it looked like the staff's contention.
Thank you, Commissioner Blank. Commissioner Secor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the 9th of September, I had a conference call with Mr. Lightfoot McCabe and or Mr. Ms. McCabe and Stephen Kaufman on this matter. They basically briefed me on the attempted sale of the units to the homeowners and the issues relating to substantial issues, specifically that their feeling was that this was not subject to the commission's jurisdiction because it was behind the first public road. The ex parte basically was the same as reported by Chairman Kruer and Mr. Supervisor Achajan.
Thank you, Commissioner Secord. Yes, Commissioner Potter.
Nice to see you, Chair. I had a McCabe-Kaufman conversation last night, identical to that described by Commissioners Akajian and Kruer.
Thank you, Commissioner Potter. Okay, with that, are there three or more commissioners that object to finding substantial issue? If there's three people, would you raise your hand? That any three that were okay? There's more than three, so we'll have a hearing on that. And I've had requests from first. What we'll do is normally we give 3 minutes per side, and first what we do is we're going to give each side 5 minutes per side today. And with that, staff, we're going to go in. Do you want to say something before I go in?
No, we can.
Normally, I don't do that, but somebody just requested it. Yeah. You know.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the only comment I would add is that the issue of whether or not this is in the commission's appeal jurisdiction, we think, is not meritorious. For one thing, relative to the maps, we have consistently noted and pointed out to the commission that the post-cert maps were done, again, with inadequate staff, inadequate ability to go down and actually see the site. We used information maps that were available to us, and aerial photography, other kinds of information that we had, and we specifically put a disclaimer on every map that these maps are not definitive. They're not dispositive of the commission's appeal jurisdiction. They are indicative, and that case-by-case determinations need to be made. So that is the approach that we have been taking over all relative to all the maps that deal with post-cert appeals areas. We don't often have these kinds of issues, but as you know, we've had them from time to time relative to the accuracy of the map when you actually come down to a specific parcel in a particular location. So, and I think the other
Director Douglas, you saying that this map has that language in there? Disclaimer?
My understanding is they all do.
Okay.
And also there was another point on the jurisdiction. I think it even fails to mention at all the 300, the issue that the Coastal Act provides appellate jurisdiction if a project is within 300 feet of the mean high tide line, right? And that wasn't even addressed in the map. So, you know, clearly that is a criteria that has to apply irrespective of what the map says.
Okay. Yes. Ms. Schmelzer?
I just want to clarify that the 300 feet that the executive director is referring to should be measured from the harbor in this case, and this is all clearly within 300 feet of the mean high tide line in the harbor.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Okay, and with that, we'll go to the usually we go to the appellants and first and then the applicant. So the appellant, Sherry Mackin. Just one of one person's going to speak for the appellants, right?
Yes, everyone else is working.
Okay.
So my name's Sherry McAdam.
You have five
minutes. Thank you. I appreciate the extra time. My name is Sherry Mackin. I'm here on behalf of the Citizens for the Preservation of Parks and Beaches, working people who live in Oceanside, California, and residents of the city of Oceanside. The Citizens for Preservation of Parks and Beaches is here from Oceanside to ask you to support staff's recommendation to find substantial issue for all the reasons listed in the staff report and our appeal. The approval of the lot line adjustment and subsequent sale of the property will prove to be a great loss to the visitors to the Oceanside Harbor. The proposed project will result in a loss of critically needed revenues generated by the leasehold to the Harbor District. In fact, at the public hearing, the Harbor Master, Deputy Manager, City Manager Don Hadley, stated in a public record that the loss of the revenues, now mind you, after being asked by a city council member, the loss of the revenues will impact the ability to operate, maintain, and improve our low-cost visitor-serving uses at the harbor, as the designation of the funds received will go to the general fund, not the Harbor District. Additionally, on page 15 of the staff report, it discusses our concerns with present and future operation and maintenance of the 54 public parking spaces at the towers. I delivered handouts to you with regard to those public parking spaces. I hope you had an opportunity to look to view them. The handouts I've supplied you with provides pictures showing how the condo owners presently abuse the public's parking by painting owners only on public parking spaces within that area. This within itself should raise red flags as to the owner's intent once the lot line adjustment, should it go through. And the fact that a 22-page document was served on the 11th hour without the opportunity for our group, regular citizens who are working to respond to this within a decent time frame, is, I find, outrageous. The CPPB respectfully requests that you support staff's recommendation and find substantial issue and not approve the lot line adjustment. I did also want to state in the staff report, now that I have an extra minute or two, if you look at the staff report on this page, this was a parking diagram I submitted to the city of Oceanside, requesting the public parking spaces versus the private parking spaces. If you'll note, the line drawn here depicts pictures of the private parking spaces. These parking spaces are marked owners only. The staff report that was submitted by the city of Oceanside when this was heard at the public hearing actually states that the Marina Towers will be responsible for maintaining this lot surfacing. Well, by golly, they surfaced it all right, and they marked it with owners only parking. This is public parking. The Marina Towers is an opportunity waiting, and it's listed in our local coastal plan as well as the Harbor Precise District, and at least should require a local coastal plan amendment. We need to have a public process in Oceanside to see what the effects would be to this property, to our harbor itself, with the loss of those revenues. If you've been to Oceanside and you've used our restroom facilities at the pier, at Wisconsin Street, at Buccaneer Beach, you'll know we're in dire need of funding to upgrade, maintain, and operate these facilities. Please don't take this away from the Harbor District. Some of us just drive there to use their clean bathrooms. So we respectfully request that you do not let the lobbyist point of view take away your charge, and that's to protect the public's access to our beach. I thank you for your time, commissioners.
Thank you, Ms. Mackin. Thank you for coming today. With that, Mr. Weiss or Mr. Kaufman, and how are you going to split up your 5 minutes? Mr. Kaufman?
I think I'm going to take it all, Mr. Chairman. Kaufman for the Marina Towers Homeowners Association. Also, we are having a little technical difficulty. What worked in my office is not working here, so we're going to use your slide projector there and kind of do some new technology for you. So I hope that works for you.
Good. We're okay with it if you
okay.
are.
Okay. Good. Stephen Kaufman for the Marina Towers Homeowners Association. Today, we're asking you to find that this appeal does not raise a substantial issue. This lot line adjustment simply allows the city to create a separate legal parcel on non-titled city-owned land on which the Marina Towers condo complex is located to allow a sale of the property to the Homeowners Association. Slide. I'm going to say that. The lot line adjustment involves three lots and results in the public parking lot being left entirely under city ownership and the 200 feet of possible former tidelands being excluded and added to other former tidelands property. State Lands has confirmed in two letters, copied to staff, that the excluded downhill 200 feet, shown on a plat map, is the only area potentially former tidelands here, and we've provided those letters to you this morning. The central issue, we believe, is that there is no appeal jurisdiction here. The Coastal Act geographically limits appeal jurisdiction. Here, the lot line adjustment is located inland of the first public road. Next slide, Harbor Drive. It also excludes the only area potentially former tidelands. Next two slides. And the lot line adjustment is almost 1,500 feet from the mean high tide line, which was permanently set at the beach by a boundary line agreement, which we've passed out to you. And you'll see it says forever to put this issue to rest. No part of the lot line adjustment is subject to appeal jurisdiction. Now, staff says if any part of the parcel is subject to appeal jurisdiction, then the entire parcel is subject to appeals jurisdiction. That's wrong. The Coastal Act describes your appeal boundaries and doesn't add to these geographic limits and the rest of any property involved. This is confirmed by the adopted post-cert map, which shows the lot line adjustment beyond this appeal jurisdiction. By the note that Chairman Kruer referenced, where a parcel is bisected by the appeals jurisdiction boundary, only that portion within the area defined as appealable is subject to your jurisdiction, and by your post-cert guide, which says the same thing. So we believe there's clearly no appeal jurisdiction here, and there can be no substantial issue. But we've addressed the issues anyway. Appeal argues that the public parking lot was federally deeded to the city and can't be included in the lot line adjustment. But this was raised in 2006, and the lot line adjustment was modified so the lot remains entirely under city ownership. The appeal refers to a public roadway easement that reflects the prior alignment of Harbor Drive, but the easement is located in the public parking lot, which again the city owns. The appeal confuses lot ownership and control with maintenance. The city owns and controls the lot, but required the HOA to maintain its surface, striping, lighting, and landscaping, and nothing changes as to the lot. The appeal also argues the sale will result in lost harbor revenue. It won't. Your addendum includes a letter from the city manager that explains the sale proceeds will be equitably distributed between the harbor and the city, and the harbor will get at least the annual revenue it currently receives. Beyond that, the LCP doesn't limit the city's or the district's financial decisions. This sale replaces an annual lease payment with a premium lump sum payment of $5 million. That's 2.5 times what would be paid during the remainder of the lease. The district loses no money. And finally, staff raised an issue which wasn't included in the appeal. It's not properly before you, but I'll address that. Staff says this policy states that when the lease ends, the city must consider another high priority use for this parcel, visitor serving, park, or recreation. But the policy actually says this complex would remain as the principal use, both short and long range. The city or district should indicate their desire to the lessee for other possible uses. Sorry. But the lessee itself determines the potential for an alternative use, and it says consider residential, prestige office. These are not high priority uses. Resort residential, seasonal, and recreational uses on the garage roof. This policy only makes sense when you understand that it was written in an early LCP at a time when it was uncertain that the builder would be able to finish the project, but it was completed, and today it's fully occupied. Now, staff has also said that an LCP amendment is needed to change the reference to existing lease parcel, but the precise plan explains that this nomenclature has no significance except to key the property to the Marina Towers policy, and the sale doesn't alter the LCP in any way. So for all these reasons, we ask you to find no substantial issue. Attached to the letter I sent to you was a yellow sheet with the motion that we'd like you to adopt, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Cheryl will make a few comments too, but we want to underscore that we don't see that there's anything that we're proposing in our recommendation for a substantial issue that would result in a change in the use of the marina towers. I mean, that to me is going to be clearly a continued use. The major concern that we have is the public parking lot and public access impacts that may result from the action that the city took. And that's what we feel the commission needs to address to ensure protection of public access and recreational uses here relative to the lot. And that's the major focus of our recommendation for substantial issue. And then, Sherilyn, do you have additional comments?
Just again, regarding the appeals jurisdiction, the larger parcel that the Marina Towers is on is bisected by Harbor Drive, which is the first public road now, because Pacific Street to the south has a bridge that's been built across the river. And when that's open, then that will be a through first public roadway. But the fact that the parcel is bisected by the first public roadway, if in a lot line adjustment, if any portion of the parcel is affected by the lot line adjustment, the entire parcel is subject to the commission's review on appeal. And what they are doing is separating a portion of that larger parcel out. Even though that parcel is located on the inland side of Harbor Drive, it still is clearly subject to the commission's review on appeal. That parcel is also within 300 feet of the mean high tide line. And I just wanted to draw attention to the footnote on the bottom of page 2 in the addendum, where we, our legal counsel, has talked to State Lands Commission, and they've indicated that the map provided by the representative simply shows the historic high water mark based on a 1939 survey before the harbor was created. And the commission staff has conferred with the staff members at the State Lands Commission, who confirm they do not take the position the mean high tide line depicted on the beach west of the harbor would preclude a finding that here there is another mean high tide line located within the harbor where a tidally influenced water meets the shore. So I'm not sure if that is the determination that the applicant's representative was referring to, but we don't think that that is conclusive at this point in time, and is another reason why we think that substantial issues should be found.
Right, and in addition, the any notations on the map can't supersede the statutory description of the commission's jurisdiction. So that's indicative, suggestive, but again, notes on the map are not dispositive, and there is that disclaimer or caution that these maps are not definitive. You have to make it on the ground, case-by-case determination.
And just finally, I wanted to address that we don't feel that the staff identified any issue that wasn't raised by the appellant. When there's grounds for appeal, we have to review those in the context of all the applicable LCP policies as well as the Coastal Act policy. The appellants clearly are concerned about the sale of the property and the change in the leasehold status that then leads to that. What that is doing is allowing the residential use to remain as a permanent use, whereas in the precise plan, it's currently identified as a leasehold use. It's an interim use. True, the lease could be extended, and that would not be subject to commission's review. The sale of the property itself, we are not saying, requires a coastal development permit. But this appeal does raise the question of whether or not that residential use should remain a permanent use on this site, and the city did not address that in their appeal. We feel we do need to look at that and acknowledge it because the city didn't do that through an amendment to the LCP. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out one more thing with respect to the commission's jurisdiction in this matter. And Deputy Director Saab did point out that in footnote 1, legal counsel did speak to State Lands Commission and clarified that they were only talking about the mean high tide line at the oceanfront and not in the harbor. But I think also the email provided by Mr. Kaufman, if you read the last paragraph, supports this point. It states, I have also attached the boundary line agreement entered into between the state and the city in 1963, establishing the boundary between the state public trust lands and the city in the area of the mouth of Oceanside Harbor. It was not a determination inside the harbor. It was only a determination outside of the mouth of the harbor, which is what legal counsel confirmed when they spoke to staff at State Lands Commission.
Okay, thank you very much. And with that, I'll go back to the commission. Commissioner Riley first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just by way of background, the city owns the land under Marina Towers, but in Marina Towers you have, 67 privately owned condominiums? Is that correct?
That's correct. They own their units, but not the land.
All right. So any change in the use of that property would require a consensus of 67 private owners? Is that a fair statement?
I'm not sure of the answer to that.
Yeah, we don't know the answer to that since they don't own the land underneath. They only own the unit, and it's limited in terms of the lease of the land. So the question of what their role would be relative to any change of use.
Or what position the city would be in if they canceled the lease.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. The city council is also the directors of the Harbor District, is that correct? In terms of directing where dollars go? So they wear both hats, right?
Steve Kaufman is
indicating
yes.
I'm seeing a north-south over here. I don't know if staff knew or not.
I'm not sure, but it sounds like that would be right.
Okay. So in terms of the dollars coming in, the general fund or the Harbor District and stuff, it's the same people that decide where those dollars go is what it sounds like.
We don't know the answer to that.
Well, Mr. Kaufman, you want to come up?
Yeah, Mr. Kaufman or Mr. Weiss or the city manager, Mr. Weiss or the city, either one of you, could you address that?
I can address it. They wear both hats, and yes, they
name
direct
for the
where
record.
The funds go. My name is Steve Kaufman for the Homeowners Association, but Peter Weiss, the city manager, is here.
All right. While you're here, Mr. Kaufman, the one thing that bothers me about this is this kind of vagueness around the public parking and stuff, particularly in relative to the pictures that we've seen, where you're supposed to have public parking. It seems to be marked owner only and stuff like that. What's in the coastal development permit, to your knowledge, that's going to protect and notify the public that in fact is public parking? Are there requirements in the CDP?
No, there. It is the homeowners association, and the sale agreement is limited in its use. To
they have their own parking garage.
For their
I understand.
Parking garage and the 11 spaces that are in front of the building.
Yeah, but it looks like they've marked other spaces there as owner only. That's why I'm asking the question.
I can't answer that.
Okay,
question.
Thanks.
But the president of the homeowners association is here. Perhaps he can.
All right.
Okay, do you want to?
Let me go to staff on that.
I can answer that. There is nothing in the CDP that specifically addresses which public parking or which parking spaces are public versus private, or addresses the private easement for access across the public spaces to the private parking garage.
I think that's a problem. In terms of the parcel being subject to appeal, you know, Peter, you've got this disclaimer on the post-cert map around appeal areas, but there's specific language, apparently, on this pro-cert map, I think that's probably not on most of them, that really says that only the portion of the parcel within the area defined as appealable is subject to the commission appeal jurisdiction. That doesn't have to do with where the line is drawn. It has to do with the appeal jurisdiction of the Coastal Commission, and it's on the post-cert map. So it seems to me that isn't really covered by the disclaimer. And also, in terms of the 300-foot, I mean, the boundary agreement that we have in front of us says the State Lands Commission, the city consider it in the best interest of the state and the public to permanently fix and describe the boundary between state lands and city property and forever set at rest any and all questions related to the location of said boundary line. Now, your argument is that only applies to the outside of the harbor, not the inside of the harbor. It doesn't read that way here, so that's a concern. Well, I think that there may be grounds for finding substantial issue on the parking issue to further clarify it and ensure that the public parking there, in fact, does remain public and is posted as such. But I'm not seeing other appeal issues here that that stand up.
If I may, relative to the appeal jurisdiction, the 300 feet from the sea or the ocean, that's a statutory provision. And if the commission were to take the position that the mean high tide line doesn't extend into a harbor, I think that's a terrible precedent.
Well, I'm just saying state lands apparently has taken that position relative to an agreement.
No, they didn't.
No, they don't.
That's exactly what the council said, that their point was that they dealt with the mean high tide line outside of the harbor on the ocean side. They did not in any way address
that's somebody's current opinion over the phone. I mean, do we have a written a document on that?
Yeah.
But
go ahead, Ms. Schmelzer.
This boundary agreement, which is being done by Meets and Bounds, so this is looking at, you're not looking at a map of what this depicts. This was done by Meets and Bounds, and this is establishing the mean high tide line at the ocean.
Right.
It is not purporting and not discussing whether or not there is a mean high tide line and where it is in the harbor. So the fact that it establishes this on the ocean says nothing about whether there is another mean high tide line, and that is state lands' position.
It also purports to be an agreement between state lands and the city of Oceanside to forever settle where the mean high tide is relative to public lands and private lands. I mean, that's what it says in the resolution.
But yep. but only with respect to the lands that are discussed in the agreement, not with respect to lands that are not discussed in the agreement.
Well, I'll defer to attorneys on that.
And the other consequence of that would be that you would be saying that lands that are in the port are not public trust lands. And that's a result that seems to me to be really defy logic, and the precedent that would set would be really negative. So, I mean, our point is they didn't address the mean high tide line in the harbor.
Mr. Kaufman, do you want to be fair here, do you want to respond to the staff's point on this issue only?
Yes. I'm actually pleased and surprised that Commissioner Riley zeroed in on the nub of it. That one paragraph in the boundary line agreement is there for a reason. It's to settle the mean high tide line. Draws a line across the harbor. That's the line. The city wouldn't have entered into this agreement to fix the line if the line was somehow not the line but ambulatory and moved to the back of the bulkhead. The harbor was already constructed when this agreement was negotiated and entered into. This is a boundary line agreement. There's one mean high tide line. We're not talking about public trust. We're talking about 300 feet from the mean high tide line.
Thank you, Mr. Kaufman. And that was after the harbor was built and established. And
I believe the harbor was built in 1962. This was entered into in 1963.
Well, that's a boundary line.
Also, it refers to the map, and the map was the map that we showed you showing where the mean high tide line is at the mouth of the harbor, at the beach, basically. And that's where we took the 1,500 feet from.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this point is another reason why I think there's clearly a substantial issue, because it raises very significant precedential issues in terms of where the public trust applies and what the effect of this kind of an agreement is when it doesn't refer to the harbor. So I think that's another reason why the commission should look at this and answer that question.
Well, there's certainly, we'll hear from the other commissioners, but I have some of the same concerns Commissioner Riley raised too. And it's clearly, this is beyond the first public road. I mean, to say it isn't is ridiculous, you know. And some of these other assertions and things are in there. So let's hear from everybody and see if we go find a substantial issue or not, you know. But Commissioner Juan and then Commissioner Blank.
Yeah, what I'm hearing here are really two reasons, good reasons, to find substantial issue. First one is a little simpler to understand, and that's the question of the ability to deal with the public parking areas. You cannot deal with those public parking areas if we allow this because there are no conditions, as we've heard, on the CDP. And if we don't take this in on substantial issue, we can't put the conditions in to protect public parking. The other one deals with this whole question of what is or isn't the jurisdictional boundary. This is a very complicated legal issue. We're treading on some very, as Mr. Douglas said, some very dangerous ground here. If we go ahead and make the assumption that this is not appealable without having a full hearing enable us to really look at this in detail. This really argues for the reason for the finding of substantial issue. That is, we need to take a really good, in-depth look at it. I'm looking at this, and I don't have the meets and bounds in such a way that I can have a picture of where these lines are so that I can fully understand this. And it may be that afterwards the legal issues will be resolved in such a way that we don't have appeal jurisdiction. I don't think you can make that decision here, and I think it's very dangerous to make that kind of a decision without finding substantial issue and at least having a full hearing on it.
Thank you, Commissioner Juan. Commissioner Blank.
I think the issue for me actually is the parking lot, and maybe if I could just ask Mr. Kaufman, who owns the parking lot today? Or the city, who owns the parking lot?
Honorable Chair, members of the Commission, Peter Weiss, City Manager, the city owns the parking lot.
Great. And for the parking lot, is it public parking or is it Marina Towers parking?
It is public parking. However, the Marina Towers does have certain rights to use it. I'm aware, we were made aware about a month ago that there were owner-only spaces marked in the public parking lot, and we've directed that those be removed.
All right. So does the city like want to agree here to the Commission that those will not be Marina Tower owner lots and will make them publicly available?
We've already included that in the city's action, that those would be public parking. The Marina Towers residents would have just as much right as any other member of the public.
But when I looked at the signage, it doesn't say that it's public parking or public access. Would the city agree to put up a public access and public parking sign on that lot?
We are, based on input we've received from actually from Ms. Mackin, we are already in the process of identifying that as a separate public parking lot. It is currently not identified as a public parking lot, and it does not have any restrictions. We're in the process of doing that.
Great. So I want to make sure I heard correctly. You will put up signage, or you're thinking about putting up signage?
We are in the process of doing that right now.
Okay. And let me make clear, what rights does Marina Tower have on that lot? Do they have any parking? Did you sell them any spots? Or
there are several spaces that are part of the sale, the proposed sale, that would be restricted to Marina Towers only. And it's on the one exhibit that you had, there's a line drawn, and it would show which ones are private spaces and which ones are not.
And was there a hearing on that public sale, the sale of those spaces to Marina Towers?
That was part of the council action, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Weiss, Commissioner Juan has a quick question.
Yeah, while you're here, you may be in the process of doing this. How can you bind the city council to anything? This is a city council decision, is it not?
The action to number the lot and add whatever public signs would be a separate action by the city council. That's correct.
And it would be a separate action by the city council that has not yet taken place?
That's correct.
So, therefore, you can't bind the city council on their vote?
That's the point I wanted to make. What the gentleman is saying really is not enforceable. I mean, that may be his word, but that's why we think it's necessary for the commission to find substantial issue.
So, Director Douglas, let me just ask you then, since you've raised this, assume we found, just for the sake of discussion, no substantial issue. Now that we understand this about the parking lot, why can't the two or more commissioners find an issue with public access on this lawn.
Well, this is it. This is the opportunity for the commission to deal.
But this seems to be a ball of twine. If what we want to solve is a public access issue on the lot,
right,
why can't we either have an enforcement issue or some issue specifically oriented to the lot to just ensure that that's going to happen?
That's exactly what we're recommending, that this be dealt with as a permit by the commission, that you address the public parking concerns, and then
But why would we want to tie up an entire sale of a... Do we think the city won't do that if we don't tie up the sale of Marina Towers?
Well, no, we have no way of knowing that, and we have no way of knowing what it's going to tie up. All we're saying is that to protect public access, as the Coastal Act requires, this commission should find substantial issue and ensure that these parking spaces are, in fact, not preempted by private use.
So let me just ask one more question, and then I'll give the floor to my fellow commissioners. If, in fact, we continued this until the city council came back with that proposal, rather than tying up the sale of Marina Towers to some future date, right, does that accomplish what you want to have happen?
But I'm not sure, because we have to evaluate it in terms of what they're actually doing, and we also have to deal with the question of the jurisdiction issue. So
I'm just trying to make sure, right, that I understand your goal is, right, not to tear down Marina Towers,
no,
and build a park.
No.
It's to have public access to this lot. And anything else, staff?
I think the boundary issue is really key. So that would be one we would ask State Lands to actually bring to the commission a written explanation that they did not imply where the mean high tide line was relative to the harbor. And I think that's very important. Those are the two issues.
Well, I think I understand your position now. Thank
right.
you.
A quick question. Is it possible, given the deadlines, to continue it?
The applicant would have to waive the 49 days in order for that to happen, which they were not willing to do.
Okay. Commissioner Schallenberger, why Commissioner Wessels up?
I move that the commission determine that the appeal number A6-OCN-08-075 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under Section 30603 of the Coastal Act, and ask for a no vote.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Schallenberger and seconded by Commissioner Wessel. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a no vote. And would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Schallenberger?
Yes, please. I think that much of the discussion that's come from the dais here and the questions make it very clear that we need to have a full hearing on this, a de novo hearing. I totally agree with, I believe, what Commissioner Blank was trying to get at, but this is not the forum. We cannot, the only thing that's before us here now is whether or not there's a substantial issue. By the very nature of asking the city to make commitments to us to what to do they will do in the future tells me there is a substantial issue here. And the process that the Coastal Commission has to address this is to find substantial issue and have a de novo hearing on it. I'm also absolutely convinced that the State Lands position on the mean high tide line relative to the harbor is something that this commission really must have before us before we take a position on this. So I think the jurisdiction, I understand that the project proponent doesn't think we have jurisdiction. That's a very common thing for us to hear. But our chief legal counsel, our executive director and deputy staff seems to be completely in agreement that we do have jurisdiction. So for me, that puts it to rest. I'm not going to go with the attorneys from the project proponent when our staff is very clear that we have jurisdiction. I'm very concerned about the current situation, that there are no requirements to make sure that this public land is, in fact, available for public parking. And right now it sounds as if it isn't available for public parking. As I said earlier, all the promises in the world from this dais does not get us commitment, anything enforceable in the future, that there will be public parking. So
for that reason,
I ask for a no vote.
Commissioner Schomburg, I'm sorry, I didn't want to cut you off. I just want to clarify with the attorneys here on this motion, because the way I read it in the thing is you've asked for a no vote, correct? And it goes on to say that the staff recommends a no vote. They've recommended no vote.
Yes,
in passage of this motion, we're finding of no substantial issue in the staff report on the top of page 7. So
it's a double negative.
No,
you're correct.
No, it's a finding of substantial issue. No vote is the correct vote, but the staff report is not correct. Is that?
If the motion passes, which we're not recommending, then you would have found no substantial issue.
No.
It's written wrong. And that's why I'm trying to. Let me clarify from a real attorney now.
That should read on page 7 that staff recommends a no vote. Passage of this motion results in a finding of substantial issue.
That's what I thought. That's what slowed me down there.
The second or third no is incorrect.
Okay. So your
motion is correct.
Your motion is correct. It was the staff report was inaccurate. So that's why I wanted to clarify that.
Thank you.
Mr. Wasel, would you like to speak to your second, sir?
Yes, I'd like to make a few comments because I'm a little, you know, I don't like to go through this process because it's really bureaucratic. Unfortunately, I do think that the parking issue does require a formal contractual arrangement approved by the City Council and agreed to by the owner of the project. So I think that's an issue that I think needs to come back. I think. From my perspective, I think there is support to get this project approved, but I think we need to resolve the parking issue. And I think having a project in front of a marina and say that it's not close to the ocean, I think is something that it's very, very hard to explain. I think it's a very straightforward and very obvious issue regarding coastal resources adjacent to this parcel. So I think that issue, I think, this project may not change in 100 years, in 150 years, but the fact that we don't decide on the location of the appealable zone, I think that's a precedent-setting decision. I think we have to determine that at a subsequent hearing. So I think we can... I think we have a project here. I think the city can make this happen, but we have to go through those motions, unfortunately. But it's very necessary.
Thank you, Commissioner Wasel. Anyone else? Commissioner Secord.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think this is a substantial issue, and I don't think that largely because of the fact that the hotel and the property sits behind this first public road. I haven't been persuaded that that is so. I think that there's an issue with respect to the public parking, which I think should be an enforcement problem. We've got the city. I don't know what the city manager, but they are actually, he's already claimed that he started to do the work on clearing up the problem with the parking lot. It strikes me that hooking this whole deal, this whole project, to what amounts to an enforcement issue is overdoing it. So I think that this is a non-substantial issue. The staff has got a monstrous workload problem. If we find substantial issue here, it's going to be another, what, year?
No.
I don't know about that, but I think this is not a substantial issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Blaine.
Just point of order, Mr. Chair, how and when can I make a motion to continue? Is it after we vote on this or in between? Or?
I'd like to
make a motion to continue this until the City Council votes on the issues that concerned our executive director.
Department.
Second.
I don't know if I'm going to have clarification. This is because this is a substantial issue question.
You can always continue.
I want clarification from the
and ask them to waive the 49 days.
We can't do it because of the 49 days.
We could ask the applicant to waive that if they so desire.
Okay, counsel, are you with us here?
We were still mulling over the vote. I was. Peter just corrected me, so the real lawyer was wrong. Way the staff recommended a no vote, but they say passage of the motion, which may mean if the vote was yes instead of no.
So it's okay
would
then,
result
no?
In a finding of no substantial issue. But if the motion does not pass, then there would be a finding of substantial issue.
Okay. Now, what just happened is there's been a motion and a second to continue this. And that's why I called on the general counsel, et cetera.
You can't
there's
continue it absent a 49-day waiver.
Days.
If the city's willing to give you a 49-day waiver, okay. Then you can continue it. Otherwise, we're going to act today.
Can we ask the city if they'd be amenable to not only the waiver, but the going back to city council? Do you think this would be useful?
Yes.
And do you agree to the waiver?
Yes, we agree.
And your name for the record?
Peter Weiss, city manager, city of Ocean City.
Okay. Commissioner Blank, or would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes, I think the city's agreed to one of the executive director's issues, and I think during the continuance they could discuss the executive director's other issue, which I think is even more contentious. But I believe, given the workload and the fact that on Friday we're going to be discussing what we need to do in light of this budget and staff dollars, I'd really like to keep the workload out of staff and this not to be continued for another year.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to the applicant, and I think it's fair to staff. I think we're very close to an agreement here.
Commissioner Wan.
I could go along with this with the added condition that you just had, is that the discussion not only be with regards to the parking lot, but with regards to the appealability. If, in fact, the applicant were to agree to the appealability and the parking lot issue is resolved, then I wouldn't have a problem. So I think as long as both of those issues are included, then I could support this.
Right, and as I indicated before, once we talk to state lands, even if state lands says you clearly, the mean high tide line clearly comes in there, and this commission says you have jurisdiction, agrees with your staff, you can still find no substantial issue if the parking issue has been addressed.
Right.
So
exactly. So we can resolve both things.
Yep. Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Commissioner Riley.
Well, my concern is not lessening the load on staff, that this may, in fact, increase load on staff, because the only way that you're going to get enforceable clear requirements around the public access and parking is if you have some specifications in the CDP. And the only way to get those conditions in the CDP is to have a hearing and do that. We can't do that on a substantial issue. And, you know, if it seems to me that that's not something that should take months and months to get back before the commission. If we find substantial issue, it's a fairly straightforward single issue. So, Mr. Director, you have a comment on that?
Yes, I do. Commissioner Riley, we have, as you know, increasingly used the time while we're working on substantial issue to work with local government and applicants to address concerns that have been raised. And when those concerns are adequately addressed in our view by the local government through an enforceable action at the local level, we have recommended that commissioners withdraw their appeal. And that would be similar here, that if in fact the city now takes enforceable action to protect the public parking, that addresses that concern, that we could come back and say, okay, we're recommending no substantial issue.
All right.
Can I just ask one?
Okay.
I have just a follow-up question to the executive director, and this is truly just clarification. And I'm not saying this would happen at all, a hypothetical. The city takes action to an enforceable action to make sure that this lot is designated as public, but we, the Coastal Commission, at that point, if we don't have a public hearing on it, and and put it into the LCP. We have no enforcement action if the city does not enforce its own action. Is that accurate?
I don't believe so, because if they take an action applying their local coastal program, either through a permit, this is not an amendment, this is a permit, coastal development permit, and they fail to enforce it, then I believe the Coastal Commission has the authority to take enforcement action, because that would then be a violation of the Coastal Act.
Okay. Before I call for the question, I just want to make first we'll call on the continuance. Haven't said anything yet. I will support the continuance. I do believe the real issue for me is just the parking, and certainly this issue that I think, from what I read from state lands, etc., that we're not in the jurisdiction. When I drove by, it looked like an embankment of a railroad tie embankment, this 200 minus square feet. This project doesn't change the intensity of use, this size, or anything else. And I think the real issue here has been parking. So I'd like to see it worked out. I think we're close to working it out, and I'll support that. And with that, I'll call for the question. Again, the maker and seconder on the continuance are asking for a yes vote. Would the clerk call the roll?
Commissioner Ashajian?
Aye.
Commissioner Blank?
Yes.
Commissioner Wesel?
Yes.
Commissioner Secord?
Aye.
Commissioner Neely?
Yes.
Commissioner Potter?
Aye.
Commissioner Riley?
Yes.
Commissioner Schellenberger?
Yes.
Commissioner Wan?
Yes.
Chairman Kruer?
Yes.
Unanimous.
Unanimous. Okay. And Director Douglas, when on this continuance, just so there's not a misunderstanding with everybody here, approximately will this be coming back?
Well, I think it's going to depend on the city and
right.
the action they take to enforce or to apply enforceable conditions to protect the public parking. And then as soon as that's
okay.
done, then we would bring it back at the next meeting.
Thank you. And with that, before we move on to the next item, we're going to request on a bio break, a 10-minute bio break. Okay, we will resume the meeting, and we're on, I believe, South Coast District. Deputy Director's report, item 14.
Yes, this is the Deputy Director's report for the South Coast District. It's a pink cover item. It includes both the Orange County and the LA County items. This is the list of waivers, emergency permits, non-material amendments, and extensions for the South Coast District. We're not aware of any opposition to these items and recommend that the Commission concur with the Executive Director's determination and approve the Deputy Director's report.
Is there any objection to finding concurrence with the Executive Director's determination? Hearing none, the Commission concurs.
Next item 14A is the City of Dana Point LCP Amendment 4-06 Town Center Certification Review. This is the completion of the LCP certification process for the City of Dana Point LCP Amendment 4-06, known as Town Center. It was approved by the Commission in May 2008 to replace the Dana Point specific plan with a new Town Center plan. By its action on June 3, 2008, the City Council of Dana Point accepted all of the suggested modifications to the Land Use Plan and City Zoning Code, which is the implementation plan for the city's LCP, as approved by the Commission on May 8, 2008. And pursuant to our regulations, the Executive Director must determine whether the city's action is legally adequate and report that determination to the Commission. The Executive Director has reviewed the submittal and determined the city's action is legally adequate and in conformance with the Commission's action on this LCP amendment. Therefore, staff recommends the Commission concur with the Executive Director and effectively certify the City of Dana Point LCP Amendment Number 4-06.
Before I ask for concurrence, are there any ex parties on this item? Hearing none, no ex parties. Is there any objection to finding concurrence with the Executive Director's determination that the action of the City of Dana Point accepting certification with the suggested modifications of Major LCPA Amendment Number 4-06 is legally adequate? Any objections? Hearing none, the Commission concurs.
And item 15, are those items removed from today's regular calendar to the consent calendar by staff? They are item 16A, 508-99 Dewey, and item 17A, 594-36, the Arches Restaurant. Again, if there is anyone here to speak on these items, they should come forward now. Otherwise, the conditions are acceptable to the applicant, and we have no reason to know of any opposition to these items. We recommend that the items be approved on the consent calendar.
Move consent.
Moved by Commissioner Riley, seconded by Commissioner Secord. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this consent items? Hearing none, the commission approves the consent calendar.
That brings us to the South Coast District, L.A. County area, and the I don't have any additional deputy director's report items to report on. So that moves us to 18A, which is the City of Manhattan Beach is requesting an amendment to the implementing ordinances of its certified LCP. This amendment revises the LIP residential development standards relating to building scale, lot size, open space, setbacks, lot mergers, and accessory structures. The intent of the amendment is to limit the mansionization trend in the city, where these large out-of-scale single-family residences are replacing these smaller homes in the city's established neighborhoods. The proposed LIP revisions are consistent with a certified land use plan and do not constitute a change in the kinds, location, or intensity of use in the LCP, under the LCP, and the executive director has determined that this amendment is minor, and staff recommends commission concurrence on this matter. And that concludes my presentation on this.
Any ex parties on this? Hearing on no ex parties, is there any objection to finding concurrence with the executive director's determination that the City of Manhattan Beach LCP Amendment Number 108 is a minor LCP amendment? Hearing no objection, the commission concurs with the executive director's determination.
The next item is item 21A, and I have a PowerPoint for this item. I would like to note there's no opposition to this application, and the city is in agreement with the staff rec, but I do want to run through the project as it is a very significant project in the coastal zone and a very important project. So 21A, please. The applicant is the redevelopment agency in the of the city of Santa Monica. The applicant is proposing the construction of a mixed-use development consisting of 164 market-rate condominiums, 160 affordable rental units, 20,000 square feet of ground floor retail and residential restaurant space, and 3,000 square feet of outdoor dining. There's 619 parking spaces, public access improvements, and landscaping. The project will be designed to achieve a LEED certified silver status and includes a photovoltaic system on the roof. Staff is recommending approval of the permit application subject to the conditions outlined on pages 3 through 7 of the report. The project site, as you can see on the slide, is located south of the Santa Monica Freeway and is bounded by Main Street to the east, Ocean Avenue to the west, and Vicente Terrace to the south in the city of Santa Monica. Where's my... The surrounding area is developed with a 5-story, 72-foot-high Rand Corporation building to the east and a 96-foot-high hotel to the southeast and a 56-foot-high office building along the western edge of the development. The project site is part of the city's Civic Center-specific plan approved by the city in 1993 and amended in 2005. The specific plan also includes an approximately a 4-acre park located adjacent to the proposed mixed-use development, playfields, new streets, a recently constructed 700-space public parking structure, a 13,000-square-foot public safety building, and the recently completed Rand Corporation building. And the commission has approved coastal development permits for the parking structure, the public safety building, and the Rand office building. The proposed development consists of 7 separate buildings and are divided into 3 separate sites. Site A, it consists of 2 65-foot-high condominium buildings with ground floor retail on Olympic Avenue and Olympic Drive and Main Street frontages, with approximately 66 residences and 180 subterranean parking spaces. Site B is four affordable 60-foot-high apartment buildings for very low and low-income persons. The ground floor is a live workspace. The apartments include 28 one-bedroom, 56 two-bedroom, 66 three-bedroom residences, plus the 10 affordable live-work spaces intended for artists. There are 197 subterranean parking spaces associated with these units, and the units will be maintained as affordable for 99 years.
Just note, there's only two speaker slips, and they agree with you on every point you've made so far. And everybody,
I just
likes
wanted to talk up how this is really a model project, and maybe I'll just cut right to the chase. A model project for smart growth principles, affordable housing, and energy efficiency and environmentally sustainable development. And therefore, staff is recommending approval of this project. And I just wanted to thank the city, the project team, who's worked closely with staff to work through these issues, because we had a number of concerns. And again, staff is recommending approval. And the motion for approval can be found on page 2 of the staff report.
And Mr. Chairman, I've already recommended this to several parties as a model project and a model way to approach mixed use. So please don't make a liar out of me by not approving it.
We won't do that this time, Mr. Douglas. It is tempting, though. Ms. Schmelzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out one thing to the commission. In special condition number 2, under sub A, 1, 3, and 4, it states that that special condition applies to the applicant and its successors and assigns. That language is actually in our standard conditions, and all conditions apply to successors and assigns. It was put in there for emphasis as a belt and suspenders approach, but I just want to make sure and clarify that the commission, in adopting this, all of the conditions are applicable to successors and assigns.
Thank you very much. And with that, I'll go to ex parties, starting on my left. No ex parties on this fine project. And then open the public hearing, and I'm sure, Mr. Stacy, are you here to questions only? Oh, you're not ready for a motion?
Just about, but I think that
sure, we welcome them. They've come this far. Come up, Mr. Andy Eagle, is it?
Good morning, Chair and Commissioner.
How much time are you requesting?
You know what, I think I'm going to need 2 minutes.
Okay, you've
given,
got
it. Given what I'm hearing so far, I really just want to...
We welcome you. Just don't say anything that's going to change our mind on this project. Think of that.
I don't think I'm going to get back to Santa Monica if I do that. My name is Andy Eagle. I'm the city's director of housing and economic development. I'm very pleased to be here, and I'd first like to thank your staff for the hard work they've done in helping us with this project, preparing the application and getting it to you. We've got an important affordable housing deadline, application deadline next month, and they've really worked hard to get us to this point. As your staff said, we think this is a model project. We're really excited. I'm really proud to be a part of a community that says this is what we want to do. We want to do the right thing. Some communities are excited about 20% affordable housing in a development. We're doing 50%. It's so important in Santa Monica that we continue to maintain diversity, and this is really going to make a big difference there. We've also really committed to making this a model sustainable project, and we've been working very closely with Related California and the Community Corporation of Santa Monica to look at every way to make this a project that we hope everyone in the state will look to as a model. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
You did a good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It is a very fine project. Mr. Stacy. Well, yes, how much time are you requesting, sir?
Oh, I always ask for more than I need, but I'll only be a few seconds.
How much billable time? I mean, how much time are you requesting?
Sherman Stacy here on behalf of Related California. We are the project developer, and we will be the ones building and carrying out the special conditions, carrying out the environmentally sensitive construction
as well are very excited, very pleased with the staff's ability to advance this in order to be able to meet other agency deadlines. They worked very hard, particularly Al Padilla, who wrote the staff report, and Jack, who participated in this very eagerly and early. So with that, I would ask you to make the motion recommended by your staff and for you to have a unanimous roll call.
Thank you, Mr. Stacey. And you participate in a very good project here. Thank you for your input.
Well, that's one of the few times you ever get to tell me that.
It might be the
true.
Last, too.
That's true.
Get it in writing. Thank you very much. And that, with that, we'll recognize Commissioner Juan.
I move that the Commission approve Coastal Development Permit number 5-08-159 pursuant to the staff recommendation and recommend a yes vote.
Second. Moved by Commissioner Juan, seconded by Vice Chair Neely. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the approval of the permit as condition and adoption of the resolutions and findings that are contained in the staff report. Commissioner Juan, do you wish to speak to your motion?
No, other than the fact that this, to just reiterate what staff said, it's got a lot of good elements, two particularly good ones, the all of the green elements in it, and the affordable housing. And City of Santa Monica is particularly good on affordable housing issues, so I'm happy to recommend approval here.
Thank you, Commissioner Juan. Vice Chair Neely?
No, thank you.
Okay. With that, is there anyone else? If not, is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the Commission unanimously approves the Coastal Development Permit for the proposed development and adopts the findings that are set forth in this staff report. Thanks again, and thanks for bringing the project forward. Okay. And now what we're going to do is we're going to hear from, we have one public comment item, and then we're going to go into closed session. And at 12, so we're going to, for the public, we're going to hear from Mr. Massar on public input for 3 minutes, and then we will at 12 o'clock break, and for closed session, and for till 12:30, and at 12:30 we will go to lunch, and we'll be back here at 2 o'clock. So that's the way we're going to proceed today, if that's okay with all my colleagues. So with that, Mr. Massara for public comment. So for the public, you can wait and hear this public info by Mr. Massara, or you can come back at 2 o'clock, because as soon as he's through, we'll go into a closed session. So, or a tip, you might want to go to lunch and beat us there and take our spot. How are we doing over there? We could see the 3 minutes after. Are you going to be able to deal with it, or do we have to come back at 2 o'clock and take the 3 minutes then, Mr. Massara? You got it? Well, you pulled this one out of the fire.
This happens every time. Honorable Chair, Commissioners, Mark Massara, representing Sierra Club. I just quickly want to call to your attention something that's going on over the next 3 days in Santa Barbara. This is a map depicting a large music festival that's occurring on the beach. And what's notable is this giant fence on the beach surrounding the festivities. They expect over 5,000 people paying $100 a day to participate in this festival. And I just call this to your attention because this is one of numerous events occurring on West Beach in Santa Barbara, including volleyball tournaments and other events where significant fees are being charged to use the beach. And this appears to just be flying in the face of your policies regarding at least partial protection of public access to these facilities. The traffic and other difficulties associated with public beach access from these events, which now run nearly back-to-back all summer long at this location and are occurring up and down the state, pose significant public access questions. And I wonder how this event and others fit into your policy. Thank you.
Just a question of staff. This is the kind of thing that we generally don't allow. What is the story in Santa Barbara relative to this?
I'm not aware of this music festival, so we'll certainly look into it and get back to you on that.
Well, it's apparently not just this, but it's others. I mean, we
The volleyball tournament they have. It's after Labor Day. It's a temporary event we've determined in the past. Now, if they've changed the event time frames and are blocking off access and things like that, that is a concern that we should be investigating.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Wan. Okay, and with that, we're going to ask the public, and we'll see you back here at 2 o'clock. We're going to stay here for a closed session. Thank you. Okay. Okay, well, thank you, and we're back for the afternoon session. And would the general counsel, Ms. Schmelzer, would you like to report on the closed session?
Yes, thank you. In the matter of Manchester versus California Coastal Commission, the Coastal Commission received litigation update and advice, and that's all I have to report.
Thank you, Ms. Schmelzer. With that, we'll go to the South Central Coast District.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first item up is item 22, and this is the Deputy Director's report for the South Central District, which is a list of the waivers, immaterial amendments, and immaterial extensions for the district. Staff is not aware of any opposition to the items in the district director's report and recommends the commission concur with executive director's determination on these matters.
Is there any objection to finding concurrence with these matters? Hearing none, the commission concurs. And the commission welcomes Mr. Faust here, a distinguished...
Where's Ralph?
Mr. Faust just walked in. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, thanks. The next item is item number 23, and these are the permit items staff is recommending be moved to the consent calendar. Staff is recommending two regular calendar items to be moved to the consent calendar, and those are item 25A, the Page application, and item 25B, the Richardson application. Staff recommends the commission vote and approve these items.
Commissioners?
Move the consent calendar.
Moved by Commissioner Secord, seconded by Commissioner Schallenberger. Both the maker and second are asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on the consent calendar? Hearing none, the commission approves the consent calendar.
Next item is item 24C, and this is a request for an extension of time to consider the City of Ventura's local coastal program amendment 1-07. The city is proposing to amend the land use plan portion of its LCP for a mixed-use development in Ventura Harbor area of the city. The Coastal Act provides for the commission to extend its time limit on actions on an LCP amendment for up to 1 year, And due to workload and staffing constraints, staff is requesting a extension of the 90-day time limit on this LCP amendment for a period not to exceed 1 year. And the motion to extend the time limit is found at the bottom of the one-page staff report. And that concludes my presentation on that item.
Okay, is there any ex-parties? Any ex-parties starting on my left? No ex-parties. Commissioner Wasel?
I just have a question. This is maybe a real technical thing, but the agenda says San Buenaventura on an item on Ventura. Is that two different?
No,
is that a typo? Is that?
No, that's the official name of Ventura, is San Buenaventura.
Oh, okay.
Commissioner Secord?
Good to know.
I move the commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on the City of Ventura LCP amendment number MAJ-01-07 for a year. And I have a question.
Second.
Can I get a clarification? Did you say MAJ-01?
Negative. I said MAJ-1-07.
Okay. Just to clarify the record.
Thank you.
I'm not going to dispute or fight with you about it. Dr. Dan, I'm just getting clarification.
It was those oysters.
It was the oysters that got me.
I know. Okay. Both the maker and second are asking for a yes vote. Do you like to speak to that motion first?
Just a question to staff. I know there's staff constraints due to financial issues and the lack of a budget, et cetera. What is the internal estimate of how long these projects are going to wait before they're heard?
In this case, there are two other LCP amendments we've committed to deal with for the City of Ventura that were just recently withdrawn. And so this one will come probably 4 or 5 months down the road.
Okay.
Maybe even a little longer than that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Secord. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on the time extension? Hearing none, the commission approves the time extension.
The next item up is item 24D, and this is a request from the City of Santa Barbara to amend the land use plan and coastal zoning ordinance of its local coastal program to apply land use designations and zoning districts to three properties and portions of Las Positas Road and Cliff Drive right-of-ways that have been annexed from Santa Barbara County into the City of Santa Barbara. We were recommending approval of the amendment as submitted. However, yesterday afternoon, staff learned that Caltrans has a concern that the proposed land use and zoning designations that cover their Las Positas Road right-of-way is a Parks and Recreation designation. Although the amendment acknowledges these road right-of-ways, Caltrans is concerned that there may be additional restrictions associated with this designation that could affect future roadway improvements and maintenance. Therefore, staff is now recommending the commission continue this item to allow staff time to work with Caltrans and the city to clarify and resolve these issues. In order to continue the item, the commission will have to extend the 90-day time limit to act on the LCP amendment. And therefore, staff is recommending the commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on the City of Santa Barbara's LCP amendment number MAJ-1-08 for 1 year. And that concludes my presentation on this item.
Any ex parties on this before we make it? No ex parties.
Mr. Chair?
Motion. Yes. Yes.
Move to continue this project and to have staff work with the Caltrans relative to the Parks and Recreation designation and a one-year time extension.
Second.
Been moved by Commissioner Secord and seconded by Commissioner Akajian. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote on the time extension.
Question.
Commissioner Secord, you want to speak to that motion?
I assume there's nobody here from the City of Santa Barbara. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I did receive word from the city that they are in agreement with the extension.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Commissioner Akajian?
That was going to be my question, Mr. Chair, and staff answered it.
Okay. Anyone else? Any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this time extension as suggested by staff and made by the maker and the seconder? No objection. It's unanimously approved.
I have a PowerPoint for the next item, if you could pull that up, please.
Yeah.
This is going to be...
The next item is item 25E, and the applicants are Gemma Marshall and Deborah English. The applicants in this case are requesting an after-the-fact approval to subdivide a 10.52-acre lot into two lots of approximately 5 acres in size. Staff is recommending denial of the permit because the applicant is proposing to subdivide property into two lots, thereby increasing the residential development density within an environmentally sensitive habitat area. The subject parcel is located in a rural area of the Santa Monica Mountains and is developed with an existing single-family residence and a water well and a storage trailer and a approximately 500-foot-long access road to access a well off of Henry Ridge Road. The remainder of the site is densely vegetated with undisturbed chaparral vegetation with some oak trees and is part of a large contiguous chaparral habitat which extends off-site in all directions and constitutes environmentally sensitive habitat area. The commission approved a permit for the existing residence on the property in 1990. The property was subdivided pursuant to a May 2000 Los Angeles County Superior Court judgment to partition the property between Ms. Marshall and Ms. English. Ms. Marshall granted the eastern half of the subject property to Ms. English through a quick claim deed on July 19, 2000. In addition, both Ms. English and Ms. Marshall received conditional certificates of compliance from Los Angeles County dated April 4, 2002. And these CFCs effectively divided the property into two parcels. And on this slide here, we can see the subject site. And where's my little? There he is. And that's existing residence here. And the two lots will be, one will be on... Well, that thing doesn't work, on either side of the road. So the new lot will be down in this area where they have this 500-foot-long road leading to this existing water well. In response to an enforcement action by the Commission's Enforcement Division, the applicants submitted a coastal development permit application for the lot split. Although the applicants submitted the permit application for the lot split, the applicant's attorney submitted a letter arguing that although the subdivision of the property clearly occurred after the effectiveness date of the Coastal Act, his client should not be required to obtain a coastal development permit for the subdivision because the division of land was part of a judgment resulting from litigation between the co-applicants. Commission staff believes the subdivision of subject property constitutes a violation of the Coastal Act and is not excused by the judicial nature of the Partition Act judgment. The Coastal Act requires that any person wishing to undertake development in a coastal zone obtain a coastal development permit in addition to any local permits which might be required. The Coastal Act clearly defines development to include any change in the density or intensity of use of land, including but not limited to subdivisions pursuant to the Subdivision Map Act and any other division of land, including lot splits. No coastal development permit was issued by the Commission for the division of the subject property, and therefore the property, in our view, has not been legally subdivided. Title 10.5 of Part 2 of the California Code of Civil Procedure provides the rules and procedures for judicial partitioning of real property. Section 872.040 provides nothing in this title excuses compliance with any applicable laws, regulations, or ordinances governing the division, sale, or transfer of property. The Coastal Act permit requirements apply to and govern the division of real property in the coastal zone, and under the plain language of this section, the permitting requirement must be complied with in a judicial partitioning action. Moreover, the civil procedure simply provides that the partition action statutory scheme does not excuse compliance with other laws. The Attorney General has gone further to explain that this section means that the court may not order the physical division of property in violation of any applicable laws governing the division, sale, or transfer of property. It is clear that given these restrictions, the Superior Court orders dividing the property should not have been issued as it failed to conform to the requirements of the Coastal Act, and the Commission is not bound by the order. This application was submitted on November 29, 2007, and did not include many of the typical filing requirements for Land Division in Santa Monica Mountains, such as a biological report or analysis characterizing the habitat on the property, or a geologic report and percolation studies for the new lot. Staff sent the applicant an incomplete letter in December 2007 outlining what additional information was required in order to file the application. The applicant's attorney, Fred Gaines, refused to submit this information in a letter to commission staff in January of 2008. Subsequently, staff received a letter from the applicant's agent, Schmitz & Associates, informing the staff that the application was considered to be complete under the Permit Streamlining Act because staff did not respond to Mr. Gaines' letter sent in January. Staff disagrees with this assertion that the application was deemed complete because by operation of law. Staff did not respond to Mr. Gaines' letter because Mr. Gaines made no pretense of satisfying the requirements for the completion of the application. Notwithstanding the failure of the applicant to provide the required materials to complete the application, staff informed Mr. Gaines that we were willing to simply proceed with the process in the application to resolve the permitting issues in this case. In order to avoid a conflict with the applicant regarding the 180-day Streamlining Act requirements, staff is recommending the commission act on the permit application today at this hearing. Given the applicant did not submit any biological assessment of the site, it was necessary for the staff ecologist, Dr. John Engel, to review all available information regarding the site, including current and historical aerial photographs, ground photos of the site, and vegetation maps from the National Park Service in order to characterize the habitat on site. Dr. Engel found that the property supports large areas of relatively undisturbed chaparral associations in oak woodland, and that the vegetation on this property is part of a much larger contiguous stand of chaparral and associated plant communities. She concludes that the native habitats on the property meet the definition of ESHA under the Coastal Act. The commission has found through numerous permit actions in the Santa Monica Mountains and through its approval of the City of Malibu's local coastal program that relatively undisturbed tracts of chaparral in the Santa Monica Mountains constitute ESHA. Section 302.40 of the Coastal Act allows for only resource-dependent uses within ESHA. And in order to avoid a constitutional taking of property, the commission has permitted limited residential development on existing lots, provided that development is limited to a 10,000-square-foot development area and the adverse impacts to ESHA are mitigated. In this case, the applicants already have an existing single-family residence on the property, which provides the applicants an economically viable use. Division of this property to create a second legal parcel would set up a situation whereby the commission would be forced to approve a new single-family residential development on the new parcel to avoid a constitutional takings on the new lot. This would result in a significant loss of chaparral and oak woodland ESHA from both the construction of the new home and the associated fuel modification that extends out 200 feet from the residence. This clearly would not be consistent with Section 302.40 of the Coastal Act. In addition, the certified 1986 Malibu Land Use Plan designates these sites as a combination of mountain land with a maximum density of one unit per 20 acres and rural land one with a maximum density of one unit per 10 acres. The proposed lot split would create two lots of approximately 5 acres in size, which would not be in compliance with the density designations in the certified Santa Monica Mountains Land Use Plan. Furthermore, given that the applicant failed to submit geology reports or percolation tests for the new lot, staff cannot determine if there is a building site on the new lot that would be geologically stable or could accommodate a septic system. Therefore, staff would be unable to make a finding that the development is in compliance with sections 302.5.3 and 302.3.1, which relate to geologic hazards and geologic stability and water quality. In conclusion, the proposed lot division is not consistent with Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act, and therefore staff is recommending denial of the permit application. The motion for denial can be found on page 4 of the staff report, and this concludes staff's presentation on this item.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Ex-parties, starting on my left, are there any ex-parties? Vice Chair Neely?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a ex parte communication with Don Schmitz, the agent for the applicant, or one of the agents, on September 8th, and he covered the background of the project, that the subject subdivision of the property was pursuant to a court order, that the County of Los Angeles issued certificates of compliance to the property's owners respecting the court-ordered subdivision, that the property owners had been proceeding in good faith on these actions, and that the Coastal Commission and County continued to neglect coordinating on the issuance of certificates of compliance. And Mr. Schmitz also asked that I consider the hardship of the property owners in the case.
Thank you, Vice Chair Neely. Commissioner Blank?
My ex parte is on file. It was substantively identical to Commissioner Neely's.
Thank you, Commissioner Blank. Anyone else? Okay. With that, we'll open up the public hearing, and we have one speaker slip. Mr. Stacy, for the applicant.
Yes.
How much time, sir, do you need today?
I'll be less than 10 minutes.
That's fine, sir. You go ahead.
Is Commissioner Sherman Stacy appearing here on behalf of the applicant English in connection with the application here to have the commission approve a permit, because the commission takes the position that a permit is required for the partition of the property between the two owners, Marshall and English. This arose because Marshall and English, who at one time were partners in the property and lived in the house, had a parting of the ways. In that parting of the ways, the Superior Court, in the disputes between them, ordered that the property be divided. And the property was then divided, and the county gave certificates of compliance in connection with that division in accordance with the court's judgment, which is attached as Exhibit 6 to your staff report and recommendation. The staff is telling you that you can ignore the court's judgment, that the court's judgment has no effect, and that they can now order the entire proceeding reversed because the commission does not agree with the division of the land, which was already divided by the roadway that went down the middle of it, as you saw from the slides of the staff. The property sits along a ridgeline, the road goes down the ridgeline, and the two halves of the property are divided by that roadway. The county had issued certificates of compliance, and the entire process was done appropriately in accordance with the court's order. The commission has wrestled before on many occasions with the fact that the County of Los Angeles issues certificates of compliance in circumstances that this commission then subsequently disagrees as to whether or not those certificates of compliance should be issued. And I think for probably 25 to 30 years, this problem has from time to time arisen. And yet somehow it continues to arise, and it affects people and how they conduct and plan their lives. And the commission has not been able or hasn't been successful in securing a coordinated sort of position with the county that, as the commission says, shouldn't do what exactly the county did. The court order, the county certificates of compliance, we believe are sufficient to comply with what the law is, which authorized, although the Partition Act doesn't authorize a division without compliance with other laws, the court judgment, we believe, does and has the effect of allowing these parties to have their property split between the two of them that owned it in the manner that is shown in the staff report. The commission could have and should have in many years past found some way with the county, and I think this complaint is not new, that these things did not happen and therefore put people who were simply trying to comply with the process as they understood it in the position now of having divided their interests, now having to go back into litigation as to how those interests are going to be allocated between the two. There are other circumstances, I expect, which will arise from time to time, but I don't think that the commission is completely without some responsibility for seeing that these things ought not to have been taking place, as the commission has had jurisdiction over the area at least in 2000 for 24 years. I make a couple of notes about the findings recommended in the staff report. First, this is not a designated environmentally sensitive habitat area. On the maps approved by the Commission in the certification of the Santa Monica Mountains Land Use Plan submitted by the County of Los Angeles, reference is made to the Malibu Local Coastal Program. The boundary of Malibu is some 3 miles away from this property, and I don't think that the Malibu Local Coastal Program has any impact either legally or illustratively with regard to the property. You've seen on the slides that the areas along the road have already been improved on several other properties in the vicinity, and a subsequent future improvement along the roadway for the second parcel that is presently vacant can be controlled by the Commission in the application that is made for a house, if and when that application is made. It ought not be necessary for the applicant simply to be able to get the approval of the division of the property to have to submit all of the reports and studies necessary to support the building of a structure which they do not at the present time intend to build. With regard to the issues concerning the Permit Streamlining Act, I think the staff mischaracterizes Mr. Gaines' letter from January of 2008, which, if you look at it as Exhibit 7, it submits many of the things that were requested by the staff for completing the application and indicates that certain items are not being submitted and explains why they are not being submitted. It was on that grounds, when the staff did not respond to that letter at all, that ultimately in June, Mr. Schmitz wrote to insist that the matter be placed on an agenda as the application having been deemed complete. There is a dispute as to whether that is the case, but we are here, and that's somewhat moot at this point. We're here at a hearing, although from our point of view, the hearing is already beyond the 180 days provided in the Permit Streamlining Act, which would have expired on August 29th. So in our view, the Commission ought to approve it. Looking at the circumstances surrounding it and giving reasonable concurrence with the reasonable investment-backed expectations that the property owners had in going to court and the court ordering it partitioned. The division of the property, I don't think, is going to cause any significant effects in the coastal zone. The development of the property along the roadway there can easily be accomplished at some point in the future and can be mitigated by conditions which this commission often deals with on properties that are smaller than the areas it would like to see but that already exist. We don't see any significant cumulative effects. These circumstances of facts are very, very rare to arise, and I think that the Commission, rather than following the staff recommendation to deny the application, should instead approve the application or tell the staff to come up with special conditions, if you wish, upon which the application could be approved. Our view is that the Commission's action is not required. We do not believe the Commission has jurisdiction, but we are submitting it in order to be able to resolve an issue with the Commission and avoid any future dispute. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you for coming. Thank you for your testimony. With that, I'll close the public hearing, and I'll go back to staff for their response. Mr. Ainsworth?
Yes, thank you. I've covered most of Mr. Stacy's issues in my presentation, but the one a couple of issues I do want to touch on is this idea that we have not been coordinating with the county and have not come to some sort of agreement with regard to processing of conditional CFCs and the need for coastal development permits for those conditional certificates of compliance. We have worked very hard with and very closely with the commission, the county, and communicated with them. This goes back years, back in the early 90s or even the late 80s, about the need to have a notation on the CFCs indicating that a CDP is required for conditional certificates of compliance. The county agreed with that. And in fact, they had passed an ordinance whereby conditional CFCs issued after the Coastal Act were to have a notation on the CFC indicating that a coastal development permit may be required. And in this case, that wasn't done, and I don't know why it wasn't done, but that's a problem that we'll deal with the county. Notion that this area is not designated as an ESHA on the LUP map is really not relevant, because there's also a policy in the LUP that indicates that based on a site-specific determination, an ESHA determination may be made. And based on site-specific biological characterizations. The idea that there's no need for geology or septic report, percolation reports, or biological reports for lot splits is kind of silly in my view, because otherwise, how are we going to determine where the appropriate building site on the property is located? This is raw land. In many cases, it may require extensive grading. The geology may not be right. And the lot configuration, the determination of lot configurations or appropriateness to split a lot is critical, and that we need that information in order to make that call. We do not believe the 180-day Permit Streamlining Act deadlines are in play here, but to err on the side of caution, we do recommend the Commission act on this permit application to avoid any sort of conflict or litigation in the future on this issue. And that concludes...
Ms. Schmelzer?
Yes, I would... Thank you. I would just like to point out that on page 9 and 10 of the staff report, and as explained by Deputy Director Ainsworth in his presentation, there is a statutory obligation that the court ignored here, that all laws must be complied with. Mr. Stacey did not address that in his remarks. He did not address the fact that Civil Code 872.040 was not complied with. He did not address the Attorney General's opinion that said when a court orders a division contrary to state law, that it's not valid and that state laws must be complied with. So he did not address either of those points. They're laid out for you in the staff report, and they were presented to you by Deputy Director Ainsworth.
Thank you, Ms. Schmelzer. Anyone else from staff? Mr. Douglas, anything else? Okay. Okay, and with that, I'll go back to the commission, Commissioner Wan and Commissioner Secord.
I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number 407145 for the development as proposed by the applicant and recommend a no vote.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Wan and seconded by Commissioner,
Secord.
Secord, thank you. I couldn't see or tell whose voice that was. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a no vote. Failure of this motion will result in the denial of the permit and the adoption of the resolutions and findings contained in the staff report. Commissioner Wan, would you like to speak to your motion?
Yeah, first, could you pull up the slide that staff had showing the property? Keep going. No, the one that actually showed what the property. There you go. That's it. Okay. To begin with, of course, I think staff and the legal staff has made it very clear that not only is this judgment not binding on us, it's contrary to law and contrary to the Attorney General's letter. But let me take a look at the issues with regards to why this subdivision should not be approved under the Coastal Act. It does violate all of the ESHA policies of the Coastal Act. And I might add that that in addition to what Mr. Ainsworth said about how we look at ESHA on a case-by-case basis, there is no LCP for this area. It is an LUP, which therefore serves only as guidance, and that's why we do look at it on a case-by-case basis. And that this particular subdivision would violate the zoning, the density zoning in this area. So there's a lot of reasons not to approve it. But as far as the ESHA is concerned, and the reason I asked this to be pulled up, is once it is subdivided, then you must allow a development on the new parcel. Take a look at the existing residence and see what a development on this property would mean to that ESHA on the new property. It would, in fact, take out an entire area of ESHA. It would have to, because of the fire clearance regulations. And although the City of Malibu LCP is clearly not applicable here, it's very similar, and it has policies, and I point out there is no LCP here. The City of Malibu LCP has a number of policies that deal with just this question, which says that no subdivision can be allowed if that subdivision will result in a new parcel that has impacts on coastal resources, particularly ESHA, and and does not allow for the siting of a development outside of the ESHA and the ESHA buffers. And this would violate that whole concept and the commission's and the Coastal Act's requirement to protect ESHA. So this is clearly an inappropriate subdivision.
Thank you, Commissioner Juan. Commissioner Secor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Commissioner Juan. Wonder from staff about this guy. This has to have happened before. Do you have any independent recall of, I mean, this can't be the first time this has ever occurred.
Through the chair, I've been approached by other applicants in the past who have brought up this similar scenario, and I've told them, look, we can't approve something like that because, particularly in the Santa Monica Mountains where you're dealing with ESHA, a lot split of that involves increasing density within ESHA. So, but I don't recall acting on this specific case a permit action on this.
Yeah, we don't know that this particular scenario where a division happened in a court case happened without a CDP. However, the reason there's an attorney general's opinion on whether a court can order a division contrary to state law is because it has happened in other situations when the Subdivision Map Act or other statutes were not followed. So it has happened with respect to other statutes, and that's why the civil code provision was passed in order to make sure that it was clear that that should not be happening by courts, and that's why the Attorney General's opinion was issued.
And so that the court erred in, or the whoever informed the court erred in simply not applying a written rule, so we don't have to close the door after the horse is gone. This has been done.
Yes, this has happened with regard to other statutes, and that's why the civil code was passed, and that's why there's an attorney general.
Thank you very much.
For those comments. Is there anyone else that wants to comment on Commissioner Blank, I'm sorry, and then Commissioner Riley?
Well, just that it's very sad for people to get caught in a situation over several years and go through the whole process with LA and find out they're not in compliance with us, and without regard to the great level of coordination referenced by Mr. Ainsworth, you know, it seems to me that, you know, we probably need to revisit this issue, and, you know, with the county and try to avoid this, because it's very sad when people get caught in the middle like this.
Thank you, Commissioner Riley. Anyone else, I'm sorry, who wants to comment on this before I call the roll? Commissioner Lowenthal, did you want to add something?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering when the county process ended. I missed that part of the report. Was it the judgment from LA County? Was it years? You can just guess.
Just a minute. I had it right here. It was April 2004. That's when the county issued their certificates of compliance. The judgment was May of 2000, the Superior Court judgment. 2002, I'm sorry.
And just having...
The certificate of compliance was issued by the county in April 4th, 2002. The judgment by the court was in 2000. And there's been no subsequent sale of the properties, so you have the original people involved here.
Okay. So I have the same concerns that have already been articulated. This is just, I'm sure, in addition to all the stamina it requires and the resources, it's just probably a heart-rending process as well. And if there's anything we can do at a policy level to be much more coordinated, it's not the commission's doing, of course, but really tap into these agencies that provide these rulings that really should be coordinated with us. And I think these applicants who are better served, it's been years.
Yeah, and through the chair, this is a consequence of not having a local coastal program. There's a dual permitting going on. There's staff turnover at the county, things like that. And even though there's ordinances in place to deal with this particular case, it slipped through somehow. So.
Thank you. I appreciate the staff response.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else? If not, would the clerk call the roll again? The maker and seconder are asking for a no vote.
Commissioner Blank?
No.
Commissioner Lowenthal?
No.
Commissioner Wasil?
No.
Commissioner Secord?
No.
Commissioner Neely?
No.
Commissioner Riley?
No.
Commissioner Schellenberger?
No.
Commissioner Wan?
No.
Commissioner Shajian? Chairman Kruer?
No.
Unanimous.
Commission hereby unanimously denies a coastal development permit for the proposed development. Okay, and then we'll go to 26.
Yes, the next item is 26A, and this is a substantial issue hearing on an appeal of a County of Ventura coastal development permit. The applicant is the Ventura Harbor District, and if you can pull up that PowerPoint. The appellants in this case are listed on the front of the staff report. The proposed project is a 1,700 square foot, 33 foot high lifeguard tower and public restroom building to replace a previous lifeguard tower and public restroom facility that was approximately 20 feet in height. The project site is located adjacent to a public parking lot west of the intersection of San Nicolas Avenue and Ocean Drive. This area is immediately downcoast of the entrance to the Channel Islands Harbor on Silver Strand Beach. I'm not sure why those photographs are all out of whack, but the proposed lifeguard facility, as I mentioned, replaces a lifeguard tower that had deteriorated beyond repair and then had sustained some damage from storm waves. This structure was demolished, my understanding was sometime in 2002, and this is a 1972 photograph of the, the other screen looks great. So I apologize for that. I'm not sure what's going on there, but this shows the original This shows the original lifeguard tower adjacent to the public parking lot next to the channel. The proposed structure will be located in the same location as the previous structure, but will be slightly larger, and the structure is sited as far landward as possible and is located as close to the jetty to minimize potential damage from storm waves and to minimize visual impact of the structure from neighboring residences and the adjacent parking lot and the public roadway. The proposed structure will provide restroom facilities for Silver Strand Beach, which experiences heavy use during the summer months and a moderate use during the off-season. The lifeguard tower provides a station whereby senior lifeguards can view both Silver Strand Beach, the channel entrance to the harbor, and Hollywood Beach to the north. This station will provide a vantage point where lifeguards can identify emergency situations early and can provide coordination with other lifeguard stations and the Ventura County Harbor Patrol. The appellants assert that the proposed lifeguard station is not consistent with the certified Ventura County LCP for the following general reasons. The proposed structure is not compatible with the character of the area. It will block views to and along the coast. It will be constructed in an area subject to wave run-up and flooding. The actual height of the structure will be 37.5 feet, not 33 feet. The Wave Uprush report recommends that a construction of a berm or concrete barriers in the beach, which will contribute to beach erosion. The project will not protect the private rights of the adjacent homeowners and will create a threat of invasion of privacy. The facility will be detrimental to public safety because it will create areas that cannot be easily seen from the street, which will then be attractive to criminals and other illegal activities. And the project does not qualify as categorically exempt under CEQA. And finally, alternatives to the project were not properly addressed. With regard to the visual impact of the structure and compatibility with the surrounding area, lifeguard stations and public restrooms are structures that are normally associated with urban beaches in California. These types of facilities are necessary to provide for critical public safety and restroom facilities for the public. And this is an artistic rendering of the lifeguard tower and restroom facility. In its approval of the facility, the county found that locating a lifeguard station on the landward side of the beach adjacent to the existing public parking lot will allow the lifeguard station the visual access to the beach while minimizing structural intrusion on the beach itself, thereby condensing the visual impact of the structure as seen from surrounding residents and preserving existing public parking. The county did explore other siting alternatives, but found that the location adjacent to the parking lot and tucked up against the jetty as far as possible would minimize the visual impact of the structure as seen from the public viewpoints and nearby residences. The appellants maintain that the actual height of the structure is 37.5 feet from existing sand levels and not 33 feet as characterized by the county. However, given the natural and expected variability in sand levels, it is difficult to use sand elevation at one point in time to measuring the height for planning purposes. Therefore, staff agrees with the county that measuring the height of the structure from finished floor elevation is appropriate in this case. And under the LCP, a 35-foot high structure would be allowed here. And in response to neighbors' concerns, the county actually limited the height of the structure to 33 feet in height. The appellants also assert the lifeguard facility is located within a flood zone as designated on the flood insurance rate maps. The county found that in the staff report that the proposed facility was outside the 100-year floodplain as shown on the firm maps. However, the proposed facility is right on the boundary and may be within that 100-year floodplain that is shown on the firm maps. However, the LCP requires that new development minimize risk to life and property in areas of high flood hazard and that such development be sited and designed so as not to cause or contribute to flood hazard or lead to expenditure of public funds for flood control works. The applicant's consulting in geologic and coastal engineers concluded that the proposed structure is safe from flooding based on site-specific base flood analyses. In addition, the design of the building further mitigates the potential for flooding and damage due to coastal hazards. The 5-foot deepened foundation will mitigate any possible short-term erosion problems, and the concrete masonry block design is not subject to water damage from wave uprush and splash. The consultants concluded that no shoreline protection device will be required to protect the structure over its lifetime. The commission has approved at least two other permit applications for lifeguard stations with this exact type of deepened foundation design in the San Diego area. However, given that the proposed structure is on a sandy beach and that this area is subject to wave run-up under extreme storm and tide conditions, one cannot deny that there is a risk for potential damage to the structure. The question here is have the risk to life and property been minimized as required under the LCP? The county's geotechnical and coastal engineering consultants have concluded the development will be safe from flooding or damage, and that these conclusions have been confirmed by the county's public works agency. The appellants also raise the concern the proposed structure will create areas that cannot be viewed from the street, which will attract illegal behavior. The county addressed this concern in its analysis and found that the pre-existing facility that was torn down did not contribute to additional calls for sheriff patrols, and since the proposed facility is in the same location, they don't expect any additional activity would be expected. Regarding the issue of invasion of privacy to nearby residences, the proposed structure is located some 250 feet from the nearest residence, and the use is limited to primarily lifeguard and other safety uses and will not result in any invasion of privacy to the nearby residences, in staff's view. The issue related to the lack of an EIR for the project or lack of documentation for a categorical exemption are really not grounds of an appeal pursuant to the LCP or the Act. In conclusion, staff believes the county's decision regarding this permit application was correct, and therefore staff is recommending the commission find that no substantial issue exists in this case with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed. The motion for no substantial issue can be found on page 5 of the staff report, and this concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ainsworth, for that presentation. Ex-parties from the commissioners from the left, Commissioner Akajian, do you have any?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I do. On September 4th, I Thursday in the morning hours, I met with Morgan Rafferty, Executive Director of ECOSLO, and Gordon Hensley of San Luis Obispo Coast Keepers. And the discussion was about their concerns about including the finding of no substantial issue by our staff, that it is incorrect. The project significantly damages public view corridor, inconsistent with the Coastal Act 30251 Public Works, that the project will have a significant impact on beach-going public, that the proposed site is in 100-year floodplain, environmental hazard to the public, height of the proposed building violates CZO Section 8175-2, and a few other concerns that they shared. The remedy appellant suggested move off site by 20 feet will satisfy FEMA requirements without affecting operational effectiveness. Bottom line, they recommended that that I oppose the Coastal Commission staff's recommendation.
Thank you, Commissioner Kajian. Vice Chair Neely, is there anyone else first? I'm sorry, there was a light on. Vice Chair Neely, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On September 8th, I had a visit from Maggie Herbelin, who was representing ORCA, and she covered exactly the same points as were expressed just now by Commissioner Ashajian.
Thank you, Vice Chair Neely. Commissioner Wan?
Yes, on Saturday, is that the 6th, I met with Jonathan Ziv, who stated that the original lifeguard tower was only 25 feet, and it was, which was at the same size and level as the homes nearby. That the tower was located where the storm surge is, and that's what took in part what took it down originally, and the reason why it's not there. That the county, is this the county? Yeah. That the county never looked at any alternate locations. And that it's actually 35 feet, not 33 feet, that the views would be affected from the jetty, which would block public views. There's a public viewing area there. That the county said the location needs to be there, but that they believe it could be moved over. That the tower is only used part of the year, and in the very least, if they don't move it, it should be temporary, so it's taken down. That much of the time this area is underwater, and then they dealt with the question of whether or not this requires a seawall. At that point, I had not read the staff report, so we had a partial discussion about this, and I asked them about the seawall issue, but he couldn't quite answer that with me for me. Then last night, I had a phone call from Mark Massara, who said that he was very concerned about the seawall issue and that it was very clear that the geologic, both from the history of the site and the geologic, what the geology report on this says, that this is going to need some sort of protection, protective device, and that that was contrary to the process that the commission had followed with regards to seawalls and revetments on public beaches.
Thank you, Commissioner Wan. Other commissioners on my right? Anyone else for ex parties? Okay. No more ex parties. Then we'll go back to the commission and Commissioner Secord.
Was there a public hearing, Mr. Chair?
No, first of all, we have one. That's right. We have Mr. Massara wants to speak. Yeah. And. Okay, we've had the ex parties, and so then we'll open the public hearing. And normally we do 3 minutes per side, but what we're going to do here, we've been requested that this be moved to 5 minutes. So first of all, we'll ask the appellant up first. And Mr. Massara, I understand you're duly authorized and you represent the appellants now. Yeah. You want to go first? And then how are you going to divide up the time? If the appellant would come up, where's? I don't know where your speaker slips.
Yes, I'm Graham Galliford.
Excuse me just a minute here.
Yes,
okay,
of
there
course.
You go. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And
how much time, sir, of the 5 minutes?
I really need 5 minutes, but depends on.
Well, if you really need 5 minutes, it's important. This
yes.
is important to you. We're going to give you 5 minutes today because we're okay. moving along, and we'll give Mr. Massara 2 minutes.
Okay. Thank okay. you very much.
And we'll give the other side the same thing. If you want.
Okay. Great. And I okay. just need to
5 minutes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. My name is Graham Galliford, and I'm an appellant in this case. Please note that this matter is not a small issue. It matters to thousands of members of the beach-going public that support the appeal. The finding of no substantial issue by staff is incorrect. There is substantial issue supported by the factors you see on the slide slide on the screen. In addition, there's also a precedent set by a previous appeal, A4VNT04128, in which the issues cited are exactly the same as this appeal in question today. On that basis, the appeal should be found to have substantial issues, as was the case with the previous appeal. Moving to the issues in the matter, this shows the location that is proposed for the lifeguard tower. It always experiences this kind of flooding in winter. The prior structure was destroyed by regular flooding and continuous wave action in this location. The proposed site is in the 100-year coastal floodplain with wave action. The firm map on the county website for the proposed location is obscured by a black mask, so you can't actually see it. However, if you go to the FEMA website and look at the site, you can clearly see that the location is within that Zone VE, which is the 100-year coastal floodplain with velocity. Because of this, the county cannot receive a flood zone clearance or building permit for the site, and the building cannot legally be built. This is a substantial issue. The evidence of real flood zone can be seen in the following slides. You can see here an aerial view of the location for the proposed site. If you look at the FEMA map and look at the flood rate, the flood zones, you can clearly see that the building is in zone VE and therefore in the coastal floodplain with velocity. That it is here is a substantial issue. A related substantial issue is that one of the conditions of the project that the county is proposing is condition 2C, and this condition cannot be met. The special condition 2C requires that the building does not encroach on the 100-year floodplain. Clearly, this is impossible, and therefore, this is a substantial issue. In public testimony, the Ventura County said, and I quote, "They are trying to get the building finalized and located in Zone X, which is the 500-year zone. FEMA has told the county that they must locate this in Zone X. The planned location does not comply with the county or FEMA's requirement. Therefore, this is a substantial issue."
Sir, do we yes. need to tell you, are you reserving any time for your wife? There's a speaker slip in for her.
No.
You're just going to take the whole five
I'm
minutes?
I'm going to take the whole five
I just
minutes.
Don't want you to get in trouble with your wife.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Thanks. Okay. I don't think she'll give me trouble. Okay. I'm just lost where I am right now. Okay. I can go on now. Moving to another issue, it concerns the damage to the public view corridor. The staff report uses purely subjective criteria regarding this. The staff have not understood the implications of the building in the proposed location and the effect on and the destruction of public views from the vista point on the harbour entrance breakwater used every day by tens to hundreds of members of the public. This is the only accessible area in the location for viewing by the handicapped and the elderly public who cannot take access to the sand. I was told by the staff that they did not visit the site to examine the view corridor impact. How can you possibly make a judgment without viewing that? I don't know. The effect on the vista point is very significant, and a substantial issue is evidenced by the following slides. This is a picture looking south in a southerly direction from the vista point. This is what happens when the building goes up. The view goes away. Similarly, from a slightly different angle, before, after. The loss of amenity for the beach going public is a substantial issue. It specifically further disadvantages handicapped and elderly members of the public without alternative facilities to enjoy beach recreation. The proposed structure is much larger. It's 40% larger and 30% higher than the previous building. It is therefore not a replacement building, as the county asserts. The building will be 37.5 feet above grade. And this contravenes CZO 8175-2, which specifies 25 feet or exceptionally 35 feet in exceptional circumstances. The project does not qualify for a height limit exception. The county asserts that because they own an adjacent parcel, it can be put together with the existing parcel, and therefore the side lot is more than 15 feet. There's no provision in the LCP for that to be a case. It is not, therefore, possible to build this greater than 25 feet. The other issues I really don't have time to go into. I've given much paperwork to you that you have before you, which includes details of effects on beach erosion, the effect of run-up, the requirement for barriers, and so on. I'd just like to conclude by saying the foregoing and the other issues cited in the hard copy show you that there are substantial issues, and I respectfully request that you find this matter has substantial issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, for coming, and thank you for your testimony. Mr. Massara, you'll have 2 minutes, sir.
Honorable Chair, Commissioners, Mark Massara, and I rise on behalf of Appellants Chester and Jane Haynes to make one point that establishes a substantial issue beyond any doubt. This development on the sandy beach involves geohazards, erosion, and wave run-up issues. Not only does applicants' own geoanalysis acknowledge this fact and advise that berms, concrete barriers, and other protective measures be utilized, but the previous facility at this very same location was, in fact, destroyed by storms and wave run-up in 2002. Unfortunately, the project was approved without a prohibition on future armoring and clearly violates your policies in that regard. Worse, and fatally for this hearing, on page 14, your staff says in the second paragraph that since the concrete barriers, et cetera, are not now part of this application, that they can be independently reviewed, considered, and dealt with at a later date. Commissioners, this is the definition of dissembling. Staff's position ignores the fact that once a building is constructed, it is then entitled under the Coastal Act to future shoreline armoring. You can't roll back the clock later on the seawall issue if you approve the project now. The only legal way to make this project consistent with your seawall prohibition policy is to find substantial issue now and subsequently incorporate a seawall prohibition condition in the CDP. Therefore, substantial issue is required. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Massara. With that, I'll close the public hearing and go back to staff. One more, Lynn Krieger. I'm sorry. Lynn Krieger? Getting our
all but the applicant.
Speaker slips here. How about the applicant? What's the applicant requesting for time?
5 minutes, but I hope to take less.
Okay.
And I just, for the sake of the record, I don't know how this happened. This is not the Ventura Harbor District. That would be the Ventura Harbor, which is not us. It's also not Channel Islands Harbor. This is part of the County of Ventura's local coastal plan. This is not part of the harbor at all. The Harbor Department was asked to take on this project, ironically, to save money for the general fund, because we do have construction authority. We were asked by the county executive office if we would do this construction in lieu of the public works agency, because we would eat the cost of administration, which, of course, on this one has come back to bite us. There are three restrooms that have been replaced as part of this project. Two have already been replaced. They just opened, actually, within the last 6 weeks. And this is the third for replacement. This is a replacement restroom. The previous restroom and tower stood on this location for over 30 years. It stood on a standard slab. There was nothing special at all about the slab. I must correct what is continuously put out in this appeal. This restroom and tower were not taken down by waves or storm. We had a demolition contractor. It was taken down because it had aged out, as many structures of this type do on the beach. There were cracks in the cinder block, which happens over time, and the rebar inside expanded, cracked the block further, and eventually we said it just needs to come down and be replaced. The same was true for all three restrooms. The other two stand back almost 300 feet from the water's edge. So this is not an issue being taken down by storms. The foundation actually was kind of difficult to pull out, and as I said, it was just a standard 9 or 12-inch slab that was sitting on the beach. So just for clarification. As you know, this is a known surf beach. This shows a crowd. This is a summer day, so it does not look like this in the winter. This is the only area on either Silver Strand or Hollywood Beach that has public parking. We run our junior lifeguard programs here. It is true the building is a little larger. The reason is that all the facilities have to be ADA accessible, of course, and there is a concrete platform around the entranceways. We also have added a room with hooks and showers for our lifeguards to be able to have a place to store their equipment, and a shower partly for first aid purposes. There was a first aid room in the old structure. This was part of the problem. There were doors and windows that opened to the ocean side of the building, which is never smart, particularly when you have El Niños. This project was evaluated very carefully, and then I'll run through some pictures. Well before, probably 4 years ago, well before we got to a point of an appeal or any kind of hearings, we had a wave run-up study done. We had a specialist engineer referenced by your staff and by the public who reviewed it. It was also reviewed by a public works agency engineer as part of the county's permitting process. A flood control engineer from the county's flood control agency further reviewed it, and they brought in FEMA to consult. All of these believed and testified before the board that this would be an acceptable location and would not require seawall protection. We don't want to do that. It's an expense, it's a maintenance problem, and it's not terribly good for the beach. We have located this facility. And you can see here, this is an old slide. You can see one of the other restrooms right here that was replaced. It's up toward the homes. This is the facility we're talking about here. You notice it's right up close to the jetty. Part of the reason for that, of course, is to get it out of the view of the homeowners as much as possible. And Mr. Galliford has the disadvantage of living immediately behind this facility, so it does affect him. So in response to public requests, we've moved it as close as possible to the jetty. But you also see that it also provides some protection to the restroom because sand generally gathers in this corner. It is not eroded away. This is the view of one of the restrooms that was already replaced. We are trying as much as possible to make these blend in. This is just an example that I threw in. This is one of our junior lifeguard classes for this summer. These junior lifeguard classes are held immediately adjacent to what would be this restroom and tower arrangement, along with the school buses that come down to this particular part of the beach. And we believe as the county that it's important, we have an obligation to you and to the public to provide decent restroom accommodations to people who are on that beach. The aerial of the tower site you've already seen. These are two of the most adjacent homes, and the reason these are X'd was for the review that the county did. We studied the view from those two homes. One of these belongs to the appellant who is here, and another appellant, of course, is in the neighboring property. This is the former lifeguard tower, and you can see this is the ocean side of the property that did have openings, which was not terribly smart. This is from immediately a representation from immediately behind the homes. This was the location of a general location for the previous tower. Again, from an angled view, this was the location of the previous tower. The original proposal for the tower was 35 feet from the foundation, which is also how the homes in this area are measured, or from the center line of the street. The board reduced that to 33 in response to public comments. There are some additional pictures here. Again, these are some of the summer programs that are run on the beach, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Oh, if I could just add one thing, I have a few seconds left, and that is, as to the firm map, the black line that somebody referenced, I don't remember who, when you get right down to the map, is about 9.5 feet wide. And part of the reason so much work was done is to figure out where are we as compared to this line, which on these maps is 9.5 feet wide. And that was, these are not yet adopted maps. We're using the 2008 maps just because they are the most recent. Although the county has not adopted them yet, they plan to this fall.
Okay, well, we probably, thank you very much for your testimony. We'll have a question from you later if somebody doesn't ask it. In regard to paragraph, the second paragraph on page 14 in the geological report, which seems to say you do need some protection and talks about different things. So we'll come to that later. We'll close the public hearing, and with that, we'll go back to staff for response.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. couple of issues I want to touch on is that the county staff report did say that the facility, the tower, was damaged by storm wave action. And that's where that came from. And it also was a reference in one of the reports. I went back to Ms. Krieger and asked her specifically, how was this destroyed? And she had said over the period of time the facility deteriorated. Salt water got in there and damaged the rebar and all the mortar in it. And then subsequent storms did cause some additional damage. But then the county demoed that tower. The proposed structure incorporates design features to prevent that type of damage in the future. One is the 5-foot deepened foundation to support the structure. There were references in both the staff and in the engineering geologic report, I believe, that indicated that a berm or K-rail would be necessary to prevent wave wash during really high storm wave and tide activities. I went back and we clarified again with Ms. Krieger and their engineers, will this require a future shoreline protective device? The answer came back as no. Given that foundation design, they will not need to do these other things, even on a temporary basis or on a permanent basis. Given that assurance and the fact that it has this deepened foundation and that beach is artificially nourished by dredge materials from the harbor, we felt that we're pretty confident that no future shoreline protective work would be necessary here.
But they didn't agree to a waiver, did they?
There is no condition in the permit that would prevent the construction of a shoreline protective work in the future.
But if they're telling us that and making that assurance that they won't ever need it, why wouldn't we have the standard condition? I'm just asking you in your
Well, this is a substantial issue hearing, so we're just working off of the county's staff report and their findings. And we had to clarify a number of issues with the county in order to get to this point of no substantial issue. And I don't think there's any question that this area is in a wave upright zone. You can see it from the slides. We have slides of it. The fact of the matter is whether they've taken those design measures to assure that this facility will not be damaged by this kind of wave wash. And given the facts that I just laid out, the building design, the fact that this is a nourished beach, we don't think that's going to be a problem in the future. But it is in a wave uprush area and subject to storm waves, so there's always that potential that this facility can be damaged. And given a sea level rise in the future, there could be a problem. But at this point in time, we felt that this did not raise a substantial issue at this point. And also with regard to the view impacts, we didn't feel that this the location raises a substantial issue. Yeah, there will be some incremental loss of views from that ramp, but there are expansive views from the parking lot, from the sidewalk up on the jetty, and we just didn't think that was a significant issue. And that's why we're recommending substantial issue. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Ainsworth, for your comments. Is anyone else from staff that wants to add anything additional? If not, I'll come back to the commission and recognize Commissioner Secord.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the commission determine that appeal number A-4-VNT-08-057 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed. Under Section 30603 of the Coastal Act, recommend a yes vote.
Is there a second?
Okay,
it's been moved by Commissioner Secord, seconded by Vice Chair Neely. Both the maker and second are asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the findings of no substantial issue and the adoption of the resolutions and findings that are contained in the staff report. Commissioner Secord, would you like to speak to your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've heard both sides.
Vice Chair Neely?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have nothing else to add as well.
Okay. Then Commissioner Wan.
Yes, I can't agree that this is no substantial issue, and let me explain why. There are two issues. One is the fact that there is a loss of public view from a public viewing area, and you can see that public is a public viewing area on the handout from the fact that there are benches there. And so apparently that is specifically what that area is for, and on the handout from the appellant, you can see what the impact of the building will be. More importantly for me, however, the major issue here and why it raises a substantial issue is this question of future protection. This commission has been, since at least the last 10 years, this commission has been very consistent in the way it's been dealing with beach and bluff development. Because there are two policies in the Coastal Act, policy section 30253 and 30235, that to some degree contradict each other and need to be read together. And the commission for the last 10 years has been reading those two policies together. And let me sort of paraphrase them. Section 30253 basically says that new development shall not be allowed if it might require some kind of armory. I don't know that it says it in those words, but something to that effect. And Section 30235 says that existing development that is in danger from erosion must be allowed armoring. And the way we've been dealing with that over the past 10 years is to say that the problem is that once you allow development that might, and I say might, be subject to erosion, once it's been approved, even though you don't have a seawall proposed at the time of the development, once it's approved, it becomes existing development, and then you are required to provide and to allow a seawall. And that's why the comment on page 14 that Mr. Massaro is referring to is problematic here. What we've been doing up until now with all development that comes in on a beach or a coastal bluff where they might be subject to erosion is to say, if you're going to build there, you need to guarantee us that you comply with Section 30253 by signing a waiver and saying, as existing development, you waive your right to get that armoring. We're not doing that here. There is no such provision in this permit. And that is highly problematic because it's a total U-turn from what this commission's been doing for the last 10 years. And particularly in this case, where it's not a question of it might be subject to erosion, it will be subject to erosion. You can see the history here, and you can argue the extent of the involvement of wave erosion in the destruction of that building. The county's own staff report said that it was taken out by waves, while the final demolition may have been by the county. Clearly, the waves played a factor in the need to demolish that building, and the county's own study, according to this from GeoSoil, says that they may need protection. And they talk about sand berms, and they talk about the possibility of using concrete barriers. But the truth is, once this is in, if they came in for a revetment, you could not say no. And so, from my way of thinking, if we are going to be consistent with everything else that we've done to protect our shoreline from the presence of armoring and seawalls and rock revetments and concrete barriers, however you want to call it, there needs to be a provision in this plan that says that the county waives its right to put in such structures. In order to get that in, we need to take this in on substantial issue, find substantial issue, and put that policy in place. And that's the only thing that will make this consistent with what we've been doing elsewhere. It's from that perspective, it is a substantial issue because it sets a real precedent to say that because these protective devices have not been proposed at this time, that it's not necessary to look at it is simply not correct.
Commissioner Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did have a question from Ms. Krieger, if you'd like to come up. And Lynn, you had mentioned a number of studies, wave run engineers, flood control studies, but we also heard some testimony that the actual project was approved under CEQA on a categorical exemption. Is that correct?
Correct, as a replacement. Correct.
Okay. Thank you. That does concern me a little bit because although it's not directly required in terms of our review, categorical exemption basically is, you know, saying there's absolutely no environmental impact at all. And when you file it with the recorders, if nobody catches it in 30 days, then you've satisfied your CEQA responsibilities. And it seems to me that for a project like this that does have greater massing, that does have greater height, that's in a sensitive location, that is subject to, you know, some flood and wave velocity, that, at a minimum, you know, at local level, a mitigated negative deck and a hearing probably would have been appropriate to at least look at what some of the impacts are and the environmental impacts. As stands now, no environmental impacts have been looked at, you know, at any level. So that does concern me. And Lynn mentioned that it's hard to know if it's in the 100-year floodplain because the FEMA line on the map is like 10 feet wide. Actually, in the Russian River, it's 50 feet wide. And when you apply that to a 100-foot lot to decide if somebody can remodel it, it becomes a very interesting kind of activity. But it's close anyway. And I think Commissioner Wan's point and Mr. Massara's point that, you know, if we do move forward with this with this project, that I think the commission, to be consistent, should have the same kind of provisions for ensuring that that we're not going to have protective devices, particularly right down there on the beach. You know, I think that's we do that on bluff tops, but it's even more sensitive down on the beach. And so I'm not going to support the motion. I think that we do have a substantial issue here that we need to talk about.
Thank you, Commissioner Riley. I would like to add that that's exactly the way I feel. I think that the geological study, just the chance that you might require a seawall, and there's definitely testimony and facts before us that does suggest that in the geosoils study, the question, the staff report on page 14, the third paragraph, going from a 3-foot footing to a 5-foot footing. What's that going to do with all the sand and everything coming out of there? Will it become a 7-foot footing? And there's certainly testimony that there's been a concern here. And I think just the very fact, again, that we might require a seawall, we have to find substantial issue, I would think. So that's my input. Commissioner Blank, did you have something more?
Commissioner Riley had been asking me to check in with Director Douglas, but I think he's on top of the situation.
Commissioner Akajian?
Dango is with you.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead,
that's
sir.
Okay. Question for staff. I believe you said that it could be in 100-year flood zone. Did I hear you correct?
Yeah, that's really not conclusive one way or another. It's right on the line. There was a condition in the county's permit itself that said that a final survey had to be submitted to show one way or another whether it's in a 100-year floodplain, and if so, it had to be located outside that 100-year floodplain. There's no doubt. I don't think there's any question that this area is within a wave uprush zone.
And there was a slide shown by the appellant before and after. Was the old one at the same location as the new one going to be?
Yes.
So there would have been yet another picture before and after. If they had taken a picture of the old one, would have been in the area where they show now a clear view of the ocean.
There was a 25-foot high tower right there.
Right.
It's just that was demoed. That previous tower was demoed, and that's when they took that picture post demolition.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question to Ms. Krieger? Thank you, sir. Ms. Krieger, was there any effort by decision makers to look at it in other location?
Yes, there were actually 4 public meetings and 4 hearings before the board on the design of this project on a wide variety of issues, height, location. It is actually pulled back a few feet from where it was before, but if you pull it back any further, that means we're going to lose public parking spaces, which your staff was not in favor of. We'd have to reconfigure that whole parking lot and probably enlarge it in front of, instead of having it go toward the beach, have the parking lot go down in front of other people's homes, which we know would be an additional fight. Just as for you, this is a time for very tight money, and just the fact that the county has left general fund dollars in for the replacement of this structure is shows how important they think it is for public safety and for the lifeguards. And if you're concerned about the seawall, if the county can voluntarily, because this does not require action of the board, if the county can voluntarily do a waiver, I'm sure we'd be happy to do that and set this issue aside, because this kind of hearing process is very expensive to the general fund of the county.
One other question, if I may. The reason that you're going to a larger size, if the previous one was satisfactory, I know you have a lot of activities.
Primarily Americans with Disabilities Act and the addition of a shower for first aid purposes and a shower and a little locker area, and that's it.
But that's on the first floor?
Correct.
So did the height you're offering?
35 years ago when the original tower was planned, these beaches were rarely used except for by generally pretty hardcore surfers. Now, as you can see, there's a lot of general public use. And we're very concerned. In fact, a number of lifeguards came on their own to testify that it's very important to have a location where they can see both beaches. The beach is a single property, so that they can tell where the public activity is and whether additional lifeguards need to be moved and so forth. That was the reason for the additional height.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Director Douglas and Commissioner Sullenberger.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, during my nap, I had a dream.
That's too much information, Director Douglas.
No.
We don't want to hear it.
Well, it's like what you did with the Marina Towers.
If you
want to continue this and we work with the county, have them
do a waiver.
Add a waiver of future seawalls, then we can bring it back to you with a recommendation of no substantial issue again, but with that issue addressed.
You must have been talking to Commissioner Schallenberger, because that's what she was going to say.
I was dreaming.
You guys are dreaming.
I'm not dreaming. I would move continuance of this item.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Schallenberger and seconded by Vice Chair Neely. Both the maker and second are asking for a yes vote on the continuance. Commissioner Schallenberger, would you like to speak to your motion on continuance?
Yes, thank you. It does seem to me from the discussion here among the commissioners that the issue that seems to be of concern is a seawall. I have heard from Ms. Krieger that she would be willing to go back and try and get a firm, enforceable commitment that there would be no seawall in the future. And an exemption. And I'm quite comfortable with that on a lot of levels. And one is because it strikes me from an engineering point of view that the 5-foot foundation that they're putting in and no openings on the ocean side. In fact, this has been designed in such a way that the building itself has incorporated to a certain extent its own protection from any need in the future. So I'm confident from what I've read in the staff report that I don't think they will need a seawall in the future. And if we had that exemption from the county, I think that's all this commission would need. The other issues that were raised, I have not heard any commissioners really concerned with them. So I think the continuance gets us where we're going with this.
I believe that that is the case, but I would have liked to have seen that if the report can also tell us for sure if it is or it is not in a flood zone, then what is it going to happen? Does it have to start this process all over again, or do we have an understanding where it goes and what kind of problems it might raise at that time? Or since we're continuing, would it be possible to have that information back to us as well, more on a confirmed level if it is or if it's not?
Yes, through the chairman. We can certainly address that issue as well, because that was a condition of the permit, so we could do that right up front as to whether the structure is in or out of the 100-year floodplain and whether the county department of public works
we'll sign off on that or not.
Okay.
Ms. Krieger will have to waive the time, the 49-day time limit on that, and if she could do that, that would be helpful on the record.
Do you agree to state your name for the record?
Yeah, Lynn Krieger from the County of Ventura. We will happily waive the time limit.
Thank you.
Just one other point, just to be clear, is that the plan will be that the county will go back and amend the CDP pursuant to all the noticing, public noticing provisions of the LCP, and incorporate that the waiver of any future shoreline work and address the other visual issues as well in more depth.
Okay, that go
was,
ahead.
That was not what I had said is that what I've heard from the dais up here is that the issue that commissioners are concerned about is the seawall, and that if the county were to come back, having amended their CDP to include that exemption, that I believe that the commission would find, I can't speak for them, but from the discussion I've heard today, they would probably be inclined to agree with staff, no substantial issue.
There was one view issue, wasn't there, mentioned by the commissioner? Commissioner Wan.
Yeah, I did raise the view issue, and I would hope that you would at least look at whether there is a way to deal with view impacts from that jetty. Okay, that's the view issue that I'm talking about, because that is clearly a public viewing area. The other view impacts are not a commission issue, but that is a commission issue, and I would appreciate having that issue looked at during this time frame as well.
Mr. Chair, if I may, because of that.
Yes, Commissioner Kajian.
Thank you, sir. I agree, and that's why I brought up the issue of possibility of moving it if it is in the flood zone, and maybe a decision can be done all at the same time if we that had confirmation, is it or it is not, so we can address that issue more satisfactory to all concerned.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Riley, just
yeah, just to tag on to that, for a number of reasons, I think Ms. Krieger outlined to us, this is a larger facility than the one that it's replacing, and it's also higher, so there's a massing and there's a height issue here. And my recollection was that staff had not had the opportunity to go out there and actually make an assessment about potential visual issues as they may pertain to the Coastal Act. So when this comes back, I would hope that we at least have that assessment.
Mr. Douglas, do we need any more clarification or no? Okay. Yes, Commissioner Kajian.
A final question for clarification, Mr. Chair. The motion makers did not include, I guess, the other concern. And does that need to be amended at this time, or we're okay to move forward?
We're okay to go, aren't we,
okay.
Mr. Schellenberg? I think we are.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. We're going to call for the question. Is there any, on the extension, the maker and second are asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on the time for the continuance? Hearing none, the commission agrees to continue it. Okay. Statewide. Ms. Director Douglas.
We have no minutes, Mr. Chairman.
No minutes. Okay. Commissioners? Commissioners? Commission reports. Excuse me.
Yes.
Do we have any commissioner reports?
Is this
yes.
Oh, okay. That's what
you're... All right. I just wanted to make a couple of comments. I realized that about our October meeting, and I realized that, and I've discussed this with both the chairman and Mr. Douglas, and I realized that discussion will take place about this on Friday, but since I'm not going to be here on Friday, I did want to make a couple of comments. Obviously, none of us here can predict whether or not we're going to have a budget by then. But if we do not have a budget, I urge my fellow commissioners to make sure that we have at least a one-day meeting, which would be a meeting that would include only those items that would be approved as a matter of law if we do not have the meeting. And the reason for that is there are a couple of issues on, and one very important one, that would happen if we did not have a meeting, at least a one-day meeting, so you could abbreviate it. I also understand that in order to do that, it's going to create a real hardship for our staff. At that point, if we have no budget, they're not going to be getting any salary. And in order for them to come here, they would have to put the money out of their own pocket to pay their way here, if their hotels and their expenses and things. And without an income, having to put the money out creates a hardship on them. And so I don't know if my fellow commissioners would join me, but I will make the offer that should we have to go that route, I will loan the money to one of the staff members, and they can pay me back after the state gets its budget. And if other commissioners would do likewise, and we have just the minimum staff necessary to put that meeting on, that would work. So I certainly am willing to go that route to try to get this thing on, because there are a couple of, at least one critical issue for this commission that has to be heard in October. I'm not loaning it to you, Mike.
Questions, Chair?
We'll have this discussion on Friday, but I'm glad that Commissioner Juan has raised this. It's a good idea, and well, if anyone feels compelled, Commissioner Akasha?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm 100% in agreement. I think we should call the program Adopt a Staff Member.
Adopt a staff member. Okay, we can call it that. I just adopted one. I don't know who, but I'll adopt one.
Okay. Anyone else? And we'll have quite a discussion. Yeah, Vice Chair Neely, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to remind the commissioners and staff and the public that there's a reception tonight at the Avalon Restaurant in Eureka, and there's a map at your station there, and it starts at 5:30.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Neely, to remind everybody about that. Any other commissioner reports, commissioners? No other commissioner reports. Conservancy reports?
There is none, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy report? I don't believe.
My shoes are in. They found my shoes in San Francisco.
Okay.
Thank you. Deputy Attorney General's report.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Patterson stepped out of the room to make a call, so I'll go ahead and give my report.
Okay. And then you have an action item, too, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, and we have an updated legislative report, and the unless you have any questions, the only item I would call to your attention is you may have read in the paper that Senator Yilin Yi had introduced a bill that would provide some funding, grant funding, from the Conservancy to the city of Half Moon Bay for the acquisition and some restoration purposes at the Beechwood Track in Half Moon Bay. That bill went to Appropriations Committee. It was already out of the Senate. But it never was heard, so it didn't make it out of the legislature, and that's it for the year. Whether or not another bill is resurrected next year, we can't say, but for this year, the legislation for Half Moon Bay on that issue is moot. And then relative to the action item, we have the six targeted grants that are in your staff report. These are annual grants from the Whale Tail program. We are asking for your approval of these, as you have in the past, and we're asking for a reserve of $25,000 just in case that's necessary, and then if it turns out we don't need it, we can add it to the competitive grant program, which will be brought back to you at the February meeting. That is the one where we have all the competitive grants before you. These are the targeted ones.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the staff recommendation on targeted Whale Tail grants.
It's been moved by Commissioner Riley and seconded by Vice Chair Neely. Both the maker and seconder asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this? Hearing none, it's unanimously approved.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me just remind the commission and members of the public that September 20th is the beach cleanup day, and we're hoping we have another great turnout for the cleanup of our beaches and shorelines around the state. With that, Mr. Chairman, I don't have anything else. The budget, as you know, is you know as much about the status of the budget as we do, and I'll be talking about that's saying quite a bit. Actually, I'll be talking about the potential for canceling a meeting on Friday, because that's when it was noticed for.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, that's it.
Thank
We're going to adjourn. We'll see everybody at the 5:30 tonight.
Good job. Okay.
Chicago, Rock Island, and St. Louis, by the way. To the lakes of Minnesota, where the rippling waters fall, no chances can be taken on the Wabash Cannonball. Listen to the jingle, the rumble, and the roar. She glides along the woodland to the hill and by the shore. Hear the mighty rush of engine, hear that lonesome hobo call. Traveling through the jungle on the Wabash Cannonball. She came down to Birmingham one cold December day. As she rolled into the station, you could hear all the people say, there's a gal from Tennessee, she's long and she's tall. She came down to Birmingham on the Wabash Cannonball. Here's to Daddy Claxton, may his name forever stand and always be remembered in the courts throughout the land. His earthly race is over and the curtains round him fall. We'll carry him home to Dixie on the Wabash Cannonball. Listen to the jingle, the rumble, and the roar. She glides along the woodland, the hill and by the shore. Hear the mighty rush of engine, hear that lonesome hobo call. He's traveling through the jungle on the Wabash Cannonball.